high atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Just when you thought it was safe to take off your mask, those confirmed with the coronavirus doubled. The World Health Organization apologizes for not taking it more seriously. And now 75% of Americans are worried about the virus. Are you? It's day three, and it feels like the world cannot move on from the death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter. Today, TMZ was scolded by L.A. County Police for going with the story before they could notify the family. Is that the media's fault, or do the police have to move quicker in this day and age? And former state senator Martin Sandoval has pled guilty to bribery and tax evasion. He was allegedly on the take from the red light camera industry, but all signs point to him cooperating with the feds. So who's he turning on? And it better not be turning right on red. Those stories tonight and more. Good evening. I'm Justin Kaufman. Our phone number, 312-981-7200. I'm with you till 11 o'clock tonight. But our number one story has to do with Chicago gun violence. It was reported overnight that a one-year-old boy was shot in the head in an apparent drive-by shooting. The story has changed during the day as the father of the boy came clean and said there wasn't a drive-by shooting, and that instead his gun went off while fighting with his spouse. Regardless, this story is making national headlines tonight, mainly because all eyes continue to be on Chicago and gun violence. Stories like these overshadow the positives, that the 2019 numbers were down from the previous year by almost 16%. Today, gun violence prevention groups, community and faith-based leaders from all over the city, they held a press conference to announce their goal of reducing that number even further. The goal is to lower the gun violence numbers by 20% from last year's total. A tall order, but at the same time, a new, fresh way to think about eradicating homicides in Chicago. But how are they going to do it? Joining me tonight on the line is former U.S. Secretary of Education and founder of Chicago CRED. CRED stands for Create Real Economic Destiny. Secretary Arnie Duncan. Secretary Duncan, welcome back to the program.
Good evening, Justin. Thanks so much for having me.
So let's get right into this. What is the impetus for doing this? How can you pick a number like 20%? And frankly, how are you going to get it done?
Well, let me just back up first and say, unfortunately, gun violence is an issue that has haunted me my whole life. I started to lose friends when I was a teenager playing basketball on the South and West Sides. And when I went on to run the Chicago Public Schools, on my watch during my 7.5 years in that job, on average, we had a student killed every 2 weeks due to gun violence. It was a horrific rate of loss of life. And never in a school, but, at home, at the corner store, on the bus going home. And so this is an issue I honestly think we as adults have failed at. We have failed to keep our kids safe. And for me, where the city has given me so many opportunities academically, educationally, socially, culturally, athletically, this is the crisis facing the city. And we started working in 2016. We and our partners across the city have been at it for 3 years. As you said, we've seen 15% reductions each of the past 3 years, so that's significant, but we still have a long, long way to go. So to answer your question directly, how do we do it? We need to continue to reach more men, and we're touching more than 500 men on the South and West Sides who are most likely to shoot and be shot. We're helping them deal with their lifetime of trauma. We've had over 100 guys graduate from high school, and we help there. We have amazing life coaches, guys who come from the streets and have made it to the other side and can give our guys some really, really important life lessons. We teach hard and soft skills, and then we have employers hiring at the back end. Mm-hmm. And so these men who are most likely to shoot and be shot, I say every day, I see them as the solution. That is the problem. We need to walk with them. We need to learn with them. We can't arrest our way out of this. We can't incarcerate our way out of this. And I think I'm hopeful, very hopeful, that collectively, it was just a powerful, powerful press conference, probably 300 people there, that collectively, as a city commits to this, that we can hit that goal of a 20% reduction this year.
There's been so much made of, and we've had a lot of people in studio talking about this, just about how with this, obviously with the new mayor and with this renewed commitment, that violence and gun violence in Chicago is really still the number one issue. When you see that there's a violence office that's being set up, and you're part of this movement to say, hey, let's shoot for 20% deduction in gun violence. Is Chicago on the right path? Do you feel more confident today than you have at any other point when you were involved with Chicago politics?
Yeah, what I said today is that, you know, while this stuff honestly breaks my heart every single day, and we deal with lots of loss and lots of grief and lots of trauma, standing there today and just seeing the team of people who are dedicating their lives to reducing this, I can honestly say I've never felt more hopeful. And our city deserves better. Our kids deserve better. Chicago is like 7 times more violent than New York, 3 to 4 times more violent than L.A., and it doesn't have to be that way. And we're committed to, you know, trying to achieve a 20% reduction each year, and doing that each of the next, you know, 5 years, and staying with us, and just trying to make Chicago just a normal city. And we just want to give children a chance to be kids again. That's all. Just to be free of fear and trauma.
For you to say that, you know, this is a more violent place than New York and a more violent place than L.A., for those listening who are scratching their head, why? Why is Chicago more violent than some of the bigger cities that you just mentioned?
Well, it's, again, to be clear, compared to a place like New York, it's not 7% more violent. It's not 70% more violent. It's like 700%. So I want people to understand the order of magnitude, how much worse we are. If we get that 20% reduction this year, that would take us below 400 homicides, which is way, way, way too many. But it'd be the first time since 1965. Be the first time to be a 55-year low. So I always want to be very, very honest about frankly how bad we are and how far we have to go. There are many reasons why we are doing so much less well than other places. One is, I think we've been scared of this issue. We haven't confronted it head on. Two, I think we have had an arrest-only strategy, and the arrest-only strategy hasn't worked. We haven't seen these men as assets and as leaders in the community. And one of our young men spoke today at the press conference, and he was way more passionate and eloquent than I can ever be. He's frankly led up, you know, was a former gang leader who is now totally committed to creating peace and leading his group of guys in that direction. We can't win this fight without young men like that. But we have to give them a chance. Yeah. Again, we have to meet them and continue to do street outreach, continue to do trauma counseling, continue to have life coaching, you know, all the things we're trying to do through wraparound services. Yeah. None of this is easy or linear. Transformation doesn't happen overnight, but over time, the vast majority of the men want something better.
Secretary Arne Duncan is with us, the former U.S. Secretary of Education and the founder of Chicago CRED, which CRED stands for Create Real Economic Destiny. You know, when we think about today, and we saw the story of the one-year-old who was shot in the head, serious but stable, and the way that the national press picked that up, if you go to Google News, it's the number two story behind impeachment, maybe even beating the Mideast peace plan. It shows once again that people have an understanding, or maybe it's the right understanding, as you're saying, or the wrong, but there is definitely a reputation that Chicago has. How do you, in that community, in the community that's trying to eradicate gun violence, deal with the fact that there is a reputation and the national media seems to glob onto that?
Well, I think, again, we always have to be honest with our challenges and with the issues, and also be, you know, honest about the progress. And so, you know, your listeners travel. I'm sure you travel. I travel. And people used to always ask me about Michael Jordan. I was in a, you know, plane or a hotel, and now people ask me about the gun violence. And I'm happy to talk about it because it's so personal. And we get into some in-depth conversation. So Chicago has absolutely taken a reputational hit, not just domestically, but internationally. I've had real estate agents and real estate leaders saying there's a violence tax here in Chicago. Every homicide costs our city $1.4 million and, you know, hospital and legal and, you know, other costs. And so you can make a, you know, take out, again, the devastation and the destruction of families. I can make a very, very compelling case just on the ROI of why it's so much cheaper to give men a life coach and a chance to get an education and some good trauma counseling. And we just have to be honest on the challenges, but also show the progress and what's possible. So we've had 3 consecutive years of double-digit improvements. That's significant. But for me, it's not enough, and it's not fast enough. And we're just trying to accelerate the pace of change and hold ourselves accountable for getting there. And what I said today is that, you know, if we have a 15% reduction this year, does that mean we failed? Of course not. That'd be another significant reduction. And if we exceed that goal and, let's say, have a 25 or 30% reduction in violence, have we succeeded? And the answer, again, is of course not, because we still have so far to go. But I don't think you've ever seen a goal for violence reduction in the city. That's been part of the problem. We haven't been willing to hold ourselves accountable and put a marker out there. And that's what we were trying to do and say we're all in this together.
Yeah, absolutely. My last question for you, Secretary, is just the idea that Chicago right now is an interim police commander. There will be a new police chief in Chicago in the next coming months. They have to be part of the team as well, as many as the community and faith-based leaders that were at this press conference, because at the end of the day, they're the ones announcing the homicide numbers at the end of the year. What's the plan to have input or to work with whoever's chosen to be the police chief?
You know, obviously, we want to continue to work very closely. We desperately need a police chief who comes here committed to working on this. And we had an amazing detective Williams, who spoke at the press conference tonight, and she's just done an unbelievable job of building bridges with the community. And so the police have an important role to play, but it's also important for your listeners to understand that they can't do this by themselves. The police are always trying to solve the homicide that happened earlier. We're trying to prevent the next one from happening. And so we all have a role to play, having the police, you know, rebuild trust, rebuild our credibility with the community is desperately important. But we can't all stand back and just wait for the police to solve this. We need employers to step up and hire. And we have many, many employers who are hiring our guys who have, you know, criminal records and backgrounds. We have, you know, guys working at law firms downtown. We have one of our young men who's doing an amazing job at Deloitte. And these are men, not boys. They're going to eat. They're going to pay rent and take care of their kids. And it's up to us. Are they going to do that in the legal economy or in the illegal economy? And that illegal economy ultimately, unfortunately, almost all too often leads to violence. So, yes, the police have an important role to play, and we will continue to partner with them. But for the rest of us to stand back and say the police are going to solve it, that's actually part of the problem.
Okay. Former U.S. Secretary of Education, former CPS chief as well, and founder of Chicago CRED, Secretary Arnie Duncan. Secretary Duncan, thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Have a good night. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. There you go. Secretary Duncan. And he makes a great point that wherever you go, wherever you travel in this world, are you recognizing people changing from Michael Jordan or for Al Capone to, oh boy, gun violence? 312-981-7200. It may even be happening in your community. You may not live in Chicago listening to this program, and you are witnessing a different reputation come bubble up when it comes to the city of Chicago. Give me a call. Let me know. 312-981-7200. It's Justin Kaufman at 720 WGN. We'll take a break. Stay with us. Let's go to Cindy, who travels a lot. Cindy, what do people say about Chicago's gun violence when you travel?
Well, they're all afraid to come here, and I pretty much tell them that a lot of the things that the media portrays can scare you, but the problem is that the majority of these shootings seem to be gang-related.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not that I don't have sympathy for the people that are getting shot in between, you know, as unintended targets.
Right.
But from a lot of police friends that I have, the community themselves are not willing to turn in or to talk to the police about these gangs in their neighborhood or who it is that is doing something illegal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand, you know, that, yes, the people need jobs. That's all well and good, but I didn't hear anything saying about the people in the communities themselves trying to improve their communities by opening up and telling the police, helping the police to know exactly.
Right.
So that's kind of frustrating, sitting here listening and, you know, not hearing that, and I don't hear it on the news.
Yeah, thanks,
on
Cindy.
Any channel.
Yeah, I'll get into that.
You.
That's a good point. And we had, you know, Vaughn Bryant from the Metropolitan Family Services. Was in here not too long ago, and he was part of the press conference today. And we talked a lot about the no-snitch policy in communities, and there is a lot to be said about that. And I think that his point was it goes both ways, that many community members feel unsafe when they're in a position to call out a gang member because the way that the justice system works, the way that the police work, and everything in between, there's a good chance that gang member is back on the street in 2 days and knows exactly who pointed him out. So if you're protecting your family, Cindy, or trying to understand how to survive in a world in which gun violence is an everyday occurrence, you may think differently about how the justice system works. That was a conversation we had with Vaughn Bryant. 312-981-7200. Traveled to Sicily to visit family this past summer, and all they spoke about when referencing Chicago was shootings. Then Mafia and Al Capone, then skyscrapers. That's about right. That's good. No Michael Jordan, I guess. The phone number is lighting up here, 312-981-7200. We got a great show lined up tonight. I'm very excited to talk about some of the topics that you want to talk about tonight. The coronavirus, of course, I kind of teased that out at the beginning. I want to talk about that. At 75% of Americans, a new poll comes out, says 75% of Americans are worried. And you may be a little bit more worried when you look at just the stats about how prepared we are for a pandemic. It's not good. It's not necessarily this administration or the last administration, but overall, the CDC and the National Institute of Health, it is underfunded. And this is an area where we have said there are more important things in our society than preparing for a pandemic until, of course, a pandemic comes around. So is the United States ready for what China is going through right now? We'll talk about that. Also, a little bit later, tomorrow, I don't know if a lot of people know this, tomorrow is Governor Pritzker's State of the State address. And he's going to lay out plans for his agenda for the next year in Springfield. And his big, aggressive push is going to be about this graduated tax. And he, of course, will talk about balanced budget and how important a balanced budget is. But he's balancing the budget on hypothetical numbers. He is going to be counting on new revenue from a graduated tax that we have yet to vote for. It's not on the ballot till November 2020. So all reports say that the budget's going to have that revenue to lean on, and yet it's not real. Seems like something we were taught in eighth grade, consumer ed class, about balancing a checkbook that you don't do, but not sure. Let's go to Ray, then we'll take a break here. Ray.
Yeah.
What do you think about gun violence in Chicago? Do you think that, do you travel and you notice that people are saying something different about your town?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to miss it when Chicago is less than one half the size of New York and has that much more violence.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, yeah, and, well, it's easy. You point and you hit the nail on the head on the justice system. You look at places like New York, and I know people didn't like it, but stop and frisk worked. And they don't let felons who have gun violence in the past out on the street in a day or two. They keep them away. And if they're locked up, they can't shoot a gun and kill some innocent person. It's just that simple.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, you listen to the state's attorneys, well, we don't want nonviolent people in jail, but it seems like you're letting out most of the violent people. And to be honest, studies have been done. If they pick up a felon or a gang person, one of the first things they drop is the gun charge, which is the one that carries the biggest penalty.
And that was a big
deal.
Yeah.
Question to the state's attorney is, why?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ray. That was a big deal with, of course, the police chief, Gary McCarthy, and the mayor, Emanuel, talking about maximum sentences for any sort of gun charge. There's a question about that, too, because I know the stop and frisk, and I know that right now, because we are in an election year and everyone wants to drum up everything, I'm not sure, because I just read an article in the Sun-Times. I want to talk about this so bad. This Pete keeps saying that tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. But this story and about how long people stay in jail. There's one story, I think Mark Brown had it in the Sun-Times on Monday, about a guy who had a gun charge. And they put him in jail for 6 months until his trial. He got to trial and they didn't have the evidence or it was thrown out. He was acquitted. They appealed the acquittal. The Cook County State's Attorney's Office did. And he is still sitting in jail. It is almost coming up on 2 years. And he does not have a charge on him. So it goes both ways. That's like, I feel like sometimes we try to make everything black and white to say, oh, the state's attorney and this progressive state's attorney we have right now, she's letting everybody out of jail, and that's what the crime problem is. But when you look, she wasn't state's attorney back in 2015, right? Or 2014, when the violence numbers were through the roof. They've been through the roof for the last 15 years. So it's hard to say that it's just one person's policy or, and I mean, you can make an argument that maybe it's the whole entire policy and it doesn't matter who's actually elected to run it. But pay attention to that, that it's not just like we were talking about last night with the ATM thieves. Oh my gosh, it's because of the policies of the state's attorney. They're brazen. They're not afraid to be arrested. So they're just doing all this petty theft. Yeah, ATMs have been stolen in Chicago. That's like a rite of passage. The whole movie Barbershop was about that. That was a subplot of the movie Barbershop, so it's not a new thing. All right, 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you tonight until 11 o'clock. We'll take a break here. Come back. Let's talk about the coronavirus. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you here. Text coming in about violence and about coronavirus, but we'll start just saying some of the worldwide traveler here. I was shocked when I told people that the response was commonly, I wouldn't visit there. I don't want to get shot. I was in Vegas in October. The news had more stories about Chicago violence than what was happening in Vegas. When telling people where we're from, the response is always, it's dangerous in Chicago. That's just a bummer, right? Again, I'm hoping that it's an amazing story. If they can use the resources that the city is providing, but also be able to call the resources together, all the community and faith-based leaders, and also the gun prevention or gun violence prevention groups, and they can be successful in their goal to bring violence down 20%. You heard the secretary that would bring levels, the numbers that haven't been seen since as low as what they're looking for. I don't know what the number would be, under 400, he said, since 1965. That'd be quite a story. Go a long way to that national reputation. Although that would just be missed because of the numbers come out at the last week of, you know, between Christmas and New Year's. So it'd just be a bunch of best of music lists, best of TV lists, things like that. All right, let's talk about the coronavirus. And I'll start with 708. She goes, Justin, I have 8-year-old twins. My husband and I have big plans to get away. Go see the Blackhawks in Arizona on Saturday. That's awesome. Watch Super Bowl in Arizona, then come home Monday. Now, I don't know. I'm afraid to travel and bring home the coronavirus to my kids. Am I losing it? I don't think you're losing it. Because a new report out says the poll says 75% of Americans say the same thing. The coronavirus cases, they've doubled overnight as Chinese officials start to come clean about how widespread this respiratory disease is. Almost 5,000 reported cases, just over 100 deaths. And just this afternoon, China is going to let international scientists and the international community in, finally, to help with containment. The United States has responded by setting up more screeners at airports and the borders. And United Airlines is canceling planned flights to China. Although, I'm not sure that's really about containment. That's more about the bottom line. Nobody's flying to Beijing right now. And so they're like, you know what? For the greater good, we're going to cancel these flights. When the airlines say they're doing something for the greater good, think twice. Yeah, we really wanted, we really worried about the spread of this virus. So we have decided that since nobody's taking this flight, we're going to cancel it. France, Germany, and Japan have all reported that the virus is spreading in their countries, but there have been no deaths outside of China. Like I said, the poll came out today. 74% of Americans worried about the spread of the coronavirus, maybe for good reason. Is there questions about whether the CDC or the National Institute of Health are prepared for pandemics? There have been some massive budget cuts over the last couple of years, and you can't rely on hospitals to take on pandemics because experts tell us that they only keep antibiotics and other medicines in short supply. And if they have to go order new stuff, usually that's coming from China. So where are we on this? Are you among the 74% that's worried about your health? 312-981-7200. 630 says, do you know that how big China is? It's just media hype. Give me the free round trip. I'll go. That's the next, the virus risk takers. Like, I'll take those flights to Beijing. But that's a great question. That's why this is so interesting to people, because China's huge. It's massive. When I said that it's spreading in Germany and France just said they found their fourth case. Four. in the whole country of France. Maybe overreacting a bit. I think in the U.S. we're at 5. It's a big country. 5. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest with you. I think for the first time, because I will agree with you about the Arizona. My wife is flying to Sonoma for the weekend for a friend's birthday party. And I thought about it. I'm like, you might want to get one of those masks. But then again, you see there was a piece that was sent out today that was just traditionally was sent to the school districts. Communication about the coronavirus. I'm like, oh, I better open this. This is about my son's school. And all it was the coronavirus is getting people's attention. So here are some tips to avoid it. Like A, wash your hands. B, avoid people with it. That's another one. Yeah, 630 says the people in France, the 5 people in the United States, they're people coming from China. It's just media hype. I agree. But I am a little bit concerned that this brings up a bigger issue in our country. And the bigger issue to me is how prepared we are for something that might become serious. If, I don't know, the coronavirus that's in question here popped up in a Chicago neighborhood as opposed to Wuhan in China. Would our medical facilities, would our hospitals, would our government, would we be ready? And it was startling to read some of those numbers today about how we have kind of gutted the CDC and the National Institute of Health. So the United States, this is the story that I'm reading here. The United States, wealthiest nation in human history. And yet at present, our Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is spending only $500 million on programs aimed at tackling emerging diseases. $500 million! To put it in perspective, we spend $130 billion on the military. You could make an argument, rightfully so. But only $500 million? I feel like Khalil Mack gets paid more than $500 million. I think they might be paying more attention to this stuff. Brendan, are you worried?
I'm not worried. I mean, it's Wuhan has 11 million people in the middle of China, and there's been 86 deaths. It's like, and it's been out for how long now? How many weeks has it been active? I mean, if this was some super bug that was just slaying innocent people, they were healthy.
Right.
There would be a lot more than I'd like to know of those 86 deaths. I mean, those are just old people.
106.
I mean, the flu
now,
kills old people every year. It's like,
absolutely. You're absolutely right, because if you look at the influenza numbers, and this is something that someone was just texting in around as well, it's unbelievable. I mean, there's something like thousands of deaths from influenza every year. This is only 100. But because it's new, and what gets me a little bit worried, and I'm on your side, Brent, I'm with you completely. But the only thing that gets me worried is when governments, they get worried about their reputation. So you saw in China that they're like, oh, there's nobody. And then the next day, like, maybe we need a little help. It's over 1,000. That's the thing where you're like, wait a second, are you telling the truth? And if you're not telling the truth, how bad is this?
Right. Well, we would know about deaths and that new Netflix series is out now, Pandemic, where it talks about exactly what you're talking about, how truly ill-equipped we would be if a real serious bug hit that, like, was killing, like, healthy people in large numbers.
Right.
Which nature does do that periodically just to kind of weed us out a little bit.
Yeah, right.
But this is not that. This is just, you know, this fear sells, right?
Right.
You're in the media. You know, if you can get people afraid about, you know, and something about, like, it's almost like being in the water with a shark. Like, you can't do anything. If they're with a super bug where you're like, oh, you know, you're completely defenseless, and people just get, you know, just unrealistically and unnecessarily fired up about it.
Yeah, that's that. Well, you just ruined my next story. Is mold killing you? No. Thanks, Brent.
Well, it's in the penicillin, so
know,
it can't
right?
be that
there
bad.
You go. It can't be that bad.
All right,
thanks for calling.
Have a good night.
Yep. No, he's right about the fear mongering. I just wonder though. I I do agree, because you've heard a lot about the Netflix show Pandemic, and they're doing the same thing. They're just kind of pointing out the fact that here we are. It's been a couple years since this has happened, right? And we had on the virus hunters, the collection of scientists that are up at Abbott Labs, completely private industry, that are looking at, they create a viral database, not memes, but viruses. And their point, and she was on with us, I think, last Wednesday or Thursday, was that, this kind of thing, there are a ton of these. And they come up and they'll pop up for a little bit and they'll go away. And you got to study them to see how they mutate and how they evolve. And in this case, she didn't seem that concerned because she's like, well, this is part of a respiratory virus, the coronavirus category, that they're very well aware of. So it may be a different strain, but it's not something, like the movie World War Z, where we haven't seen it before. 312-981-7200. I got a ton of texts coming in. People really want to talk about this stuff. Better safe than sorry. Stay home. Yeah. 773 says, I just left a store in Niles. There was a gentleman in the, an Asian gentleman, coughing like crazy. I got to admit, it made me uncomfortable. I left the store quicker than I would have. I mean, that's what this is. And Brendan points out fear-mongering, and there's a lot of photos online and video of people with masks on. But if you really think about influenza at this time, and I have a couple of friends who, have felt ill and had the flu in the last couple of weeks, that's going to have more an effect than a coronavirus. But again, we're seeing a bad mixture here to start this story, and a story that really just started a week ago tonight. It's only been a week, people. We're acting like it's old news already, but it's only been a week. And what I don't like about these stories is I agree with Brendan wholeheartedly, and I agree with 630. I said, come on. This is overhyped. I'm talking about 100 people dying in the middle of a city of 11 million people in a country of billions to say it spread to Germany and Japan when they have 3 cases. All right, I agree with you. 5 in the United States. It's nuts. Why are we even talking about it? But it doesn't start well when the government of China won't let international scientists in. And they're also lying and covering up how many people are actually sick. That's not a good start. You would think in this global day, when we're all one planet as opposed to country to country, we would have this figured out. We would know how we don't need to be adversarial when it comes to a new virus. I thought that's why we had things like NATO or the World Health Organization, things like that. The World Health Organization apologized today. Not a good start. That's the last people I want to apologize. There are a lot of different governmental organizations I would like to apologize to me for different things they've done. WHO, the World Health Organization, the last one. I don't need them being like, hey, sorry about that. We screwed up. But they're apologizing because last week they said that the risk was moderate. They let people fly out. They didn't care. They were very limited, saying this is a moderate risk. Now they're apologizing today, saying, you know what? We screwed up. High risk. Don't you have a color code for this? I thought this was... We already get this with the Homeland Security people, that orange means something and red means something. Purple. Are we at purple? I don't know. So I am with Brendan, I'm with 630, that this is overhyped and this is media fear-mongering. I'm with that. But I also don't like the fact that this exposes that we still have government cover-up stuff. We still have World Health Organizations kind of disorganized. And probably the part that I'm most worried about is that this points out how we are not funding pandemic research and prepared beyond 2 days worth of supplies in hospitals. That's not great, especially since we pay a lot of money in taxes to the federal government. In these cases, we rely on them. Let's go to Johnny. Johnny, what's your take? Am I over yet? Should I be worried or no?
Actually, I think you should be more worried than you are. You're coming off a little blasé, in my opinion, and here's why. we don't have all the facts from China, and I don't think we're going to, and that's the way they probably want it. But, you know, what you're seeing is, you know, I'm sure you've probably seen the viral video of them quickly building a hospital where there's like 50 excavators on site, all this forced labor, and they're building these hospitals just as quickly as they can. That's not just, well, right, 100 people right, have died, right. And, well, you know, it's a virus, and we kind of know about it, maybe a different strain. I think there's certainly a lot more to this than they're leading out to it, because they wouldn't be reacting like this if there was.
It's a great point. Thanks, Johnny. See? I mean, it was... Jimmy was like, he made me think like, oh, relax. And Johnny comes on and says, stop relaxing. I can't win. Now you got me, now I'm getting scared. You're absolutely right. Now, there's a lot. As a media consumer and someone who does this talk show, and I've talked with you many a times about what we call media literacy, that who knows what's happening, if that video is actually real, if, you know, if the story's coming out. But there is a startling amount of misinformation that seems to be on purpose coming from the Chinese government. Not telling you how many people, not letting international scientists in, then finally saying, yeah, maybe we do need help. And to Johnny's point, that says something different, and it might be bigger than we anticipate. I mean, just overnight, it doubled. The numbers doubled in one night. When I got an alert, maybe after the show last night, Pete, I think it was like maybe 11:30, 12 o'clock, that said, calm is coming over the coronavirus. Everything's going to be okay. It looks like it's calming down. Then the New York Times put out a piece this morning that was like, it's not calming down. China's changing their numbers. I got plenty of texts here, people on the line. 312-981-7200. Should I be worried or should I not be? I'm so confused right now. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you here. It's 11 o'clock tonight. Talking coronavirus. Should I be worried or should I not be? Should you be? So far, it's been conflicting. I've gotten the lectures on the texts and the calls saying you're overreacting. This is all media hype. Fear mongering by the media. With their media agenda. But I've also got the story that, hey, why are we trusting the Chinese government? We've seen the viral video of them quickly, hastily building hospitals. You don't do that for 100 dead people in a city of 11 million. You don't do that for even a couple of thousand of patients. And the fact that China's not really telling us what's up, and they just today, this afternoon, finally relented and are letting international scientists and people from the World Health Organization in to help with containment, but also to study. So I would not be surprised when that happens that the numbers double again. And six, I think it's 815. 815 gives me the question of the day, the question I should be asking. 815 says, maybe the question is, at what number of deaths do you start to be worried? Right now it's 100. Would you be worried at 1,000? How about 10,000? How about 100,000? I don't know. That's something to think about. 630 also says, yeah, but if you look at the math, people that have come down with the coronavirus have doubled in the last 5 weeks. Okay, so it went to 4 people to 8 people. I get it. I am trying to relate this to the flu. Many people get the flu, many people die from it, and it just hits the same kind of vulnerable populations, whether that be older populations or younger. That's why it's imperative that you get the flu shot if you're in those vulnerable populations. And I get it. The influenza strains, they kill thousands of people. We're looking at 100 deaths only in China. There haven't been any deaths from the other countries mentioned, the United States, Germany, France, Japan. But then again, are we getting the full story? We're very smart people, us WGN listeners. We know that the Chinese government is not the best at being forthcoming and transparent. They're not running for mayor in Chicago. So I'm going to be transparent, I promise. Are they hiding the fact, because it's embarrassing. Maybe it's an economic issue for them. Let's go to Jay. Jay, what do you think? Should I be worried or should not be worried? Should you be worried?
Yeah, I'm thinking you know, you've got a city that nobody's heard of before.
It's got, should be worried or should not be worried? Should you be worried?
Yes. I'm thinking you've got a city that's got 11 million people in it.
I think your radio's on, Jay. Turn your radio off for a second. You got it?
Yeah.
There it is.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. So start again.
I'll just start again. I apologize. You've got a city that a lot of people have never heard of before, that have 11 million people in it. So, you know, even if you have 1% of those people that you have to put in isolation, that's 11,000 people put in isolation in hospitals. And look at the city of Chicago. You know, we're, 30% of that size, whatever?
Yeah, right.
You know, there might be 300 beds that are in isolation like that with negative air pressure in the city of Chicago or in the metro area.
Right, you're not even sure if we're prepared for that, right.
And that's just 1% of their population. There's 11,000 people that they have to put someplace.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jay. Sorry to cut him off there. He's right. He makes a very good point about preparation. That's kind of the third aspect of this conversation. I think people, the World Health Organization excluded Taiwan from the talks because of Chinese politics. So we don't even know if, you know, the Taiwanese people are affected by this. I mean, this is politics. Why is it even politics in this? Gosh, we're talking about politics in the next hour. We'll talk about Springfield politics. I don't know. 847 says, also think about the impact that Chinese New Year will have on the spread of the virus. The country gives their workers 2 full weeks off to travel for the holiday. Imagine that virus traveling freely for 2 weeks. I think we should be worried to some extent. I agree to a certain extent, but they've tried to quarantine or contain the people of that region by not letting them leave. That's been the whole thing. The Chinese government is not the United States government. The United States government can't really force us to not leave. But in China, unfortunately, they have a different set of rules there when it comes to human rights. They shut down a bridge. You're staying in that city. Yeah. So it's a good question. And we'll obviously stay on it. But I think for this program's sake, we can come back to this tonight. We should, just about whether or not you should be worried that you're getting the whole story. I think the Western media is doing a good job of trying to suss the story out. But we got to stay on it. And I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens when the international scientists and disease specialists get their hands on the city of Wuhan, right? We'll see if that number doubles to something else when there's at least the promise of accurate reporting. That's the frustrating thing for me, is that this story doesn't seem very accurate. Probably by design. That's what happens when you have governments with their own agendas. 312-981-7200. We're gonna get the news. Vic Fawn's news coming up here. Coming up at 8 o'clock, let's talk about Springfield and the state of the state. Tomorrow, Governor Pritzker goes in front of the chambers down in Springfield to lay out his agenda for 2020 and the new fiscal year, which starts in July. He's gonna promise a balanced budget, but he is going to be assuming that the revenue that is new, that will help with the balanced budget and the billions of dollars in backlog, is coming from a new source called the graduated tax, which has to be voted on in November. Is that kind of putting the cart before the horse? Is it a balanced budget if you're using hypothetical numbers? This is a classic Popeye. I'll pay you for a cheeseburger or a hamburger, and I can't even remember. I need to work on my Popeye references. Everyone knows that. And I'm like, you know, the hamburger, the thing, there's cheese on it. I don't know. It's on Tuesday. I think you'll get it on Tuesday. Anyway, we'll talk about that and have the Illinois Policy Institute on as well. Coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour. Is it a balanced budget if that revenue has not been voted on? That's the conversation that's coming up after Vic's news. 773 says, I believe it's Wimpy that said, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. There it is. And yes, we should be very worried about getting the virus.
312-981-7200. It's Justin Kaufman at 720 WGN. I'm with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Let's move on from the coronavirus and talk about what's happening in Springfield tomorrow. It's the State of the State Address, in which Governor Pritzker will lay out the priorities for his next fiscal year, kind of jumpstart the budget talks. In the speech, it's reported there will be property tax relief talk, some early education talk, and of course, talk of the balanced budget. But hold your horses on a balanced budget. We're all very aware of how controversial balanced budgets have been over the past couple years. The Rauner administration was made and eventually broken on the concept of balancing budgets. But this year, the Dems, who control the House and Senate, are already talking about how the budget will be balanced because they're going to switch to a graduated tax instead of the flat tax after they crack open the Constitution, after voters say it's okay in November. The last time I checked, the budget is approved in the spring session, ending in May. And it's official by July 1st. So how can there be a balanced budget if the revenue is still hypothetical? It's a good question to ask Adam Schuster. He's my guest tonight, budget and tax research director for the Illinois Policy Institute. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Am I confused by my months? I mean, I don't understand how you could say you have a balanced budget or going to talk about having a balanced budget if revenue comes later than when the budget's approved.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And it's actually a little bit later than you said, even, because while voters would have the opportunity to vote on the ballot measure in November, it actually wouldn't take effect until January 1st of next year, which is right in the middle of the budget year. So they would only have half a year of the higher income taxes and the higher revenues that come with that if they were to try to rely on the progressive income tax to balance this year's budget. And we should say they're staring down a budget deficit that Pritzker's office estimates is at least $1.8 billion.
Adam, it's interesting because this was a big, obviously this was a big deal in the spring session last year just because they got it passed and now it has to be voted on by voters. There's going to be an aggressive push for this, not just at the speech tomorrow, but also, you know, with advertising, everything happening in the next couple months. Is it a slam dunk that Illinoisans are going to say, yeah, go ahead and open the Constitution and let's change the tax code?
Absolutely not. I think that, you know, there will be an aggressive campaign in favor of the progressive income tax amendment. There will also be an aggressive campaign against the progressive income tax amendment. You know, there's opponents and research organizations like myself who have said that this is a measure that would open the door, that would make it easier for politicians to raise taxes on everybody, not just the top 3%, like the initial rate proposal, but, you know, eventually moving that down to capture larger swaths of the Illinois population, including the middle class. And we've seen that the polls are actually trending against the progressive income tax. Over the last legislative session, we saw support for the progressive income tax ballot measure actually decline during the spring session. So it's far from a slam dunk. And one read of this would be that it's actually kind of intended, you know, the governor relying on this revenue is intended to kind of put the thumb on the scale and encourage voters to pass it. It's similar to a strategy that Governor Quinn tried, former Democratic Governor Quinn, when he was pushing for an income tax hike back in 2011. He passed essentially two budgets, or presented two budgets, one of which relied on those higher income tax revenues, and the other of which intentionally slashed sort of core government services, services that he knew would be very, you know, politically unpopular to cut. And the idea was to encourage the public to support the higher income tax rates.
So this has been done before. I mean, the sort of pressure that's put on voters when they see what the, I guess, what the other result could be. My question to you, though, is as we look at this, and we're going to hear a lot about balanced budget and how the Democrats have put much more stability to the governor's mansion and to the budgets in Springfield. Is this stability? And this seems to me, and I'm you know, trying to play it right down the middle here because maybe it's a good idea, but it doesn't seem like this is traditionally how you balance a budget.
No, I mean, this is the opposite of stability. I think that a wise move, you know, if you're being neutral on the income tax amendment itself, you know, even if it did pass, I think that the best use for that revenue would be to pay down the state's bill backlog. The governor is, you know, did claim to balance the budget last year. My own analysis found something different, that there was, it was going to continue to be unbalanced as it has been for 19 years in a row now. The last time we ended a year in the black was 2001. So, you know, it's not stable now, I would argue. And, you know, counting on sort of phantom revenues or hypothetical revenues adds even more uncertainty to what's already going to be a very difficult budget process, having to close a $1.8 billion hole. And we have $7 billion of unpaid bills right now. There's various businesses and individuals around the state waiting payment from the state to the tune of $7 billion. So if they do get an extra half year of revenue, that should be used to pay for the bill backlog, not to, you know, raise spending above what the state could already afford.
Right. Adam Schuster is my guest. He's the Budget and Tax Research Director for the Illinois Policy Institute. You know, when you think about that, that's been the fear ever since the Rauner administration, that the bill backlog would be forgotten about. That at a certain point there would be, you know, debt forgiveness or whatever the government's version of that is, and that a lot of these vendors and people who are owed money by the state are just going to get shafted. Is that a concern when you're looking at such a hefty number that is owed to these businesses?
I mean, people should absolutely be concerned about whether they're going to get paid if they're doing business with the state. You know, people are already waiting way longer than they should. The state kind of imposes on itself high interest penalties for this form of debt through something called the Prompt Payment Act. And the idea is that if the state isn't paying its bills on time, it should have, you know, high interest to kind of encourage it not to pay its bills on time.
Right.
Well, that hasn't worked, so we still aren't paying the bills, but now we're racking up all these interest costs on top of that. So what we really need is a fiscal plan that isn't just targeting, you know, single-year balance. We can't just be trying to make sure this year, you know, nominal revenues match nominal expenditures. We have to be, you know, putting us on a path to eliminate that debt and solving, you know, the structural issues that are causing the budget conversation to be a crisis every year. I mean, in other states, they pass budgets, and it's not really a newsworthy event. And in Illinois, every year we're staring down multi-billion-dollar deficits, and every single year it's like politicians are scrambling and fighting to figure out, you know, how they're going to make things work. And that's because it's structurally imbalanced.
Yeah.
It's not, yeah.
But I would say, Adam, that the Governor Pritzker in this case has, that's what the whole idea of having the progressive tax, the idea of cracking open the Constitution, has been to say, for far too long we've been doing this year by year, let's change the tax structure. So they're trying to do that. So I give them credit for the idea that they're coming up with something new. My question to you, though, is it pensions is still the issue, and it's been the issue since I've been on the air here at WGN Radio, and it's and much longer than that. But it seems to me that the only way out of that is when you're in that constitution and you're thinking about changing the tax structure, then maybe you take a look at pensions as well. Is there any chance that the flavor and the current in Springfield would push politicians to looking at that?
You know, it's hard to read the political tea leaves. I'll say we haven't seen a lot of will to really tackle the pension crisis lately. But, you know, back in 2013, a Democratic supermajority-controlled General Assembly did pass pension reform. It was signed by a Democratic governor. As we know, the court stopped that. So now we would need the constitutional amendment to get pension reform done. My organization has already, the Illinois Policy Institute, Illinois Policy, I should say, has partnered with lawmakers down in Springfield and filed language that would amend the Constitution regarding pensions and allow for reform. But it wouldn't strike the pension clause entirely. What it would do is create a distinction, which already exists in other states, between benefits someone has already earned and the future growth rate in those benefits. And it would say what you've already got can never be taken away. But the formula at which that grows going forward is subject to change to make sure that it's affordable and sustainable. We think it's right. A fair compromise and a balanced solution, and I certainly hope they'll take it up.
Yeah, it's always tough, you know, when you're talking about things that are promised to people that they have depended on or had agreed to be state workers because of that, to go in there and monkey with it. That's always tough, and it's a tough sell, right? It's always a tough sell.
Yeah, and you have to strike that balance because, you know, we have to understand, you know, there's teachers, university employees who didn't pay into Social Security. They didn't have a 401k offered by their employer. This is their only, you know, means to have a secure retirement. And so that is, you know, that's exactly the type of balance we're trying to strike with, you know, protecting earned benefits but allowing adjustments to the future growth rate. It's because, you know, obviously we have this huge financial problem, financial analysts and economists widely agree that the benefits can't be paid at the current levels. So something needs to change, but you need to do it without, you know, leaving retirees without a secure retirement.
And you have to go in and crack open the Constitution, or at least when you're in there, before you sew it back up. Say one last thing. We'll see if that works. Adam Schuster, Budget and Tax Research Director for the Illinois Policy. Adam, thanks for joining us tonight. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks a lot.
All right, there you go. That's good. I don't know. I would make an argument. 312-981-7200. Let's talk about the state of the state. What do you want the governor to talk about? Do you want him to talk about balanced budgets? Do you want him to talk about in platitudes tomorrow about how great the changes to marijuana and gambling and everything else has been? Or do you want him, or do you want him to talk about graduated tax, the progressive tax, as Adam calls it, and this pension crisis that just looms over us? What are the ideas in Springfield now that there aren't a lot of ideas left? The state constitution has us bound, but there has to be some creative juice that's thrown into the mix by the lawmakers in Springfield. And right now, they just kind of all seem to be sleepwalking around it. So what do you want to see? And do you like this idea that you're balancing a budget on hypothetical revenue that is coming later? I'll go on a limb. I'll start the conversation. I like it. I think it's bold. So we need more of this. It's going to have, obviously, it's going to have people who are going to be critics of it. But someone's got to step up and come up with creative solutions. And I think it's pretty creative. Go in there and change the tax structure, get some more revenue, new revenue, balance a budget on the hypothetical that the voters in Illinois will support it. 312-981-7200. Call up and tell me I'm wrong. We'll take a break. It's WGN Radio, 720. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200. Tomorrow, Governor Pritzker is going to be down in that lovely mahogany room. What do they talk? Is it the Senate that he does it in front of? I forget which chamber. It might be Madigan's chamber, the House. Regardless, he's going to be down there doing a state of the state. We're going to find out how many G's he drops like his predecessor. Remember Governor Rauner? Spending. Cutting. Somewhere, some political consultant's like, voters don't like G's. Get rid of them. Last year's State of the State and the political speeches that Governor Pritzker has made have been pretty effective. He's a good speaker. He does a good job. I'll give him a lot of credit. I always thought Pat Quinn was kind of like a school principal who was like, today's the assembly? Oh. Getting up there with yellow paper everywhere. Like, no, okay, so next, what are we going to do? Yeah, huh? Want to do that? Huh? Like a Midwest Bernie Sanders up there doing his thing. And Bruce Rauner, yeah, it was really hard to by the dropping G's, the folksy thing he was doing. It took away. So Governor Pritzker's speech last year was good. We'll probably have another one tomorrow. But I saw in one of the stories was just about, I don't know, it was about how he's going to tout his accomplishments. The accomplishments being marijuana, gambling, and casinos. Those are accomplishments? Is that where we are in society right now? That all the vices, we've legalized all the vices, those are your accomplishments? It's like what you're doing good for our society? 708 says, I'll fight you. You're wrong about the graduated tax. It won't pass. People don't understand it, and they're not going to vote for something they don't understand, especially when it involves changing the Constitution. Yeah, but it's their job. You're going to see a bunch of commercials coming out in the next. It's going to be all Pritzker money being thrown at this thing. And they will find an effective, simple way to explain that rich people are going to get taxed more. You're not going to see a change, but those fat cats like Ken Griffin, ooh, they're going to get a change. Ken Griffin was in Maxim magazine today, by the way. I know what you're thinking. Maxim still being published? Or Ken Griffin is sexy? It was kind of interesting. All right, let's go, Steve. Steve, you agree with me? Do you think that the graduated tax is a good idea? That's bold, it's fresh, creative?
First off, I think Ken Griffin is very sexy, and I used to publish. I used to subscribe to Maxim, so
why'd you
I'm
stop?
All for that. the wife.
So. All right, what's your thought on the budget?
Well, first off, I'm a teacher, so I kind of get tired of everybody blaming everything, right. all the budget woes on the pension and that it's the teacher's fault. So my first thought is, like, if I ever had a choice as a teacher to say, do I want to put it into the pension or not, I would say I'll keep my money and I'll invest it. Mm-hmm. But as a teacher, we don't get that choice.
You don't take Social Security either. That's, people forget about that. And this argument, they completely forget about that.
Unless you're in Wisconsin, you can get a little, get a little of both.
Okay.
But I'm all for just, you know, if you ask me today, will you put in 0.5% more to get out of the long-term debt?
Yeah.
I would be in 100% support of saying, let's all contribute just a little bit more now to pay off the long-term debt.
Yeah.
But just give us options as teachers. Don't keep taking our money. And historically, Illinois has treated the pension system like a bank account.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And, you know, I would somehow love to say, you know, let's dismantle that, but give us as options as teachers to say, let us do our own system.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I hate that. I hate that in this conversation. It's always, all right, we know we screwed up, but what do we do now? Let's not focus on the past. It's always the politicians. They just raided the cupboard. Like they never had to come due. Let's go to Jefferson. Love that name. Jefferson.
Mr. Kaufman, how are you?
I'm good. How about you, bud?
Okay. Good conversation last night and tonight.
All right.
And I think one could make a reasonable connection between the two when it comes to the downstaters versus the Chicago folk and so forth.
Sure.
What could you do me a favor and could you elaborate why you find it, quote-unquote, innovative?
About the tax? Okay, so you need more money off the tax. What you're doing right now with the flat tax, everybody's not getting enough done. So you don't have a lot of options. You go to property taxes, you can cut services. This cut services route with Bruce Rauner didn't go right? So my thought is if you're going to a graduated tax and you can show that there's going to be more revenue that's generated from it, I feel like it's an innovative, fresh look at the way that taxes are done. Other states have applied it. And they've tried it, and they've been able to generate more revenue. And I think it's a smart way to kind of go about generating more revenue for a state that needs it. Your turn.
What about taxing services?
Well, you could do that.
So your landscaper, your dry cleaner.
Yeah,
you know, I have a problem with you know, not you personally, of course, at least yet. But you know, where we want to go after the guy who's worked for it. I don't make a huge amount of money, but I'm not poor either.
Right.
And I got a problem with people who think that someone, and I think Bill Brady said it, you know, if you have a family of six, let's say, and you're living in DuPage County or Lake County, $250,000 isn't really that much money.
No, all of us
run in circles with people who, whatever they do, whether they're a small business owner, whether lawyers, partners in an accounting firm, architects, whatever. Make $250,000.
Yeah, $250,000.
It's really not that much money.
$250,000 in Chicago is going to get you food stamps at this point.
And if you look at the real estate market and so what's going on in the North Shore and parts of Lake County, there are houses that aren't selling. This graduated tax, progressive tax, fair tax, however you want to candy coat it, is going to do nothing but add more uncertainty to certain select parts of the real estate market because people aren't going to want to move into these homes. They're not going to want to relocate to Chicago.
Yeah. Jefferson, I love your passion. I love your name. Thanks for calling, man. Let's go to Raymond. Raymond, what's your thought? What do you like? Do you like the graduated tax, the flat, the fair tax, as they say, the progressive tax? What do you like?
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of mixed emotions on all this. The reason why I called is there was a comment made about the pensions and solving the pension problem. The issue I have with that statement is that there wasn't a pension problem before the 1990s when the state of Illinois decided to borrow against the pension to never repay it.
Yeah, Jim Edgar.
So, you know, as somebody myself, I'm a school teacher. I don't get Social Security. I don't have a 401k where I work because they don't offer it. So that pension is my livelihood. And the fact that people are playing in Illinois fast and loose with it and then tell us it's our problem that we've caused it, it's not something we've caused. It's the state of Illinois who borrows against things that they don't repay.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more, man. Thanks, Raymond.
That's a great point.
And I'm not saying that because, oh, boy, I'm all on the side of teachers and labor and everything in between. But what a weird conundrum we're in as a society that the only way out is to vilify those who did everything they were supposed to do, and it was our politicians and our lawmakers, and us, I guess, and our voracious appetites for more services and more government, that we couldn't afford it, and we just kicked the can down the road. So the idea that now we're going to look back and say, oh, you know what, it's the teachers, they got a sweet deal, it's their fault. Are you kidding me? Wasn't a sweet deal. No one was saying it was a sweet deal in the 80s and 90s. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We come back and talk. I got a ton of texts here and people still calling in. As long as you guys want to talk about it, I'll tussle. I don't mind tussling. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. 847 says Illinois is the Titanic and our politicians are deciding what color to paint the walls. Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN. We're talking about we're previewing the state of the state, what we want the governor to talk about tomorrow. He makes his big state of the state address, which lays out his priorities for the budget talks that'll commence thereafter. Adam Schuster was on from the Illinois Policy Institute, which has renamed itself Illinois Policy. Did you hear Adam say that? He kind of stumbled off an institute. They must have done that at some point during the Rauner days. But he had made some good points about, he had put a op-ed out in the Chicago Tribune this week. I think it was maybe at the end of last week or this week, talking about compromises that need to be made for pension reform. While in the Constitution, if you go in there for the progressive income tax, that we take a look at modifying the way that pensions are done. It's a great read. Find it on the Tribune. Let's go to Bill. Bill, what do you think? What do you think the governor should be talking about tomorrow?
Well, I would like to say I am in favor of the progressive income tax.
Mm-hmm.
We're one of the few states that have income tax for a state and don't have the progressive income tax. And, you know, all this anti-sentiment, it's driven by people with a lot of money who don't want to pay more taxes. And you can see the way that goes, that as years go by, decades go by, these people are just amassing bigger and bigger fortunes, and they could buy enough influence to, unfortunately, sway those who don't make a lot of money.
That's the cycle, right?
Yeah, and you hear this thing about people, you know, running out of the state of Illinois because of taxes. Well, I looked into that, and the bulk of those people are not high earners, because part of the beauty of Illinois is that you could make a high income here. So the fact that you could do that and then you're going to cry about paying more taxes, I have no sympathy for that. And I think if you look at that theoretical 250K earner you were talking about, I mean, I think that's pretty high up in the echelon to be crying poor mouth.
A lot of texters agree with you, Bill. Thanks for the call. People called out the idea of $250,000. But, and I agree with Bill. There are a lot of different income brackets in the state of Illinois. And some have had easier times of it than others. And I saw some of the texts as well saying, if you raise this tax, we're gone. More people are going to leave. But as Bill points out, you know who's leaving? It's not people with money. It's people without it. Let's go to Chris. Chris, you're on the line. Chris, what do you think?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I'm good. You know, I come from a lot of overlap for what the other callers are saying. I happen to be an attorney. We live in Lake County. My wife is a public school teacher for 30 years. And one of the equations that She's a few years away from being retired in her, she'll be retiring in her mid-50s, that no one has addressed. Aside from the borrowing against the pension funds, no one has addressed the fact that when the pensions were set up, people had maybe a 5 or 10 or 15-year life expectancy when they were paying in over, let's say, a 25-year or 30-year career.
Yep.
Then they were drawing out only for 10 or 15 years. Realistically, she's going to draw out roughly, fingers crossed, 40 or 50 years, ideally. And the problem is Social Security and pensions, you're paying in about 15% on the employee and employer side, and then you're going to draw out 75% for life at the end. And if you can't adjust the benefit side, I think fairness-wise, if people are going to draw on a pension for 40 years, that they have to be contributing more on the front side to reflect what they're going to draw out in, yeah, in pension benefits.
And to be fair, that's what Adam's op-ed is about. Just he talked about early retirement being one of the issues, and that's the same similar situation of how many more years people are using the pension system than it was designed to do.
Right.
But it's
multiple.
It's
yeah,
hard
like
to
three
say
three or four
yeah.
times
yeah.
probably.
It's hard to say when your wife has been a public school teacher for as long as she has, and the deal she made not to take Social Security. It's hard to then after the fact. Say,
well, yeah,
oh, well, we got to change it, man. We got to change it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely after the fact. But I think, and coincidentally, my daughter is studying elementary ed, and she wants to be, that's her career too. So on a going forward basis, if you're going to have, you know, a 40-year payout, if you're going to work for 30 years and draw out for 40 years, you just have to pay in, you know, more on that side.
Yeah.
On the other side, what the other gentleman said in terms of what 250 is, what 250 gets you, you know, I work, you know, a 50 or 60 hour week, you know, and I'm contributing to earn my salary. And, you know, 250, you know, it's a middle class lifestyle, but it's certainly not, you know, frivolous, high-end living. So I understand that people always, it's whose ox is getting gored. But in reality, just a point about what the other gentleman said about house values. We bought our house in 2005, and it's worth about $100,000 less than we paid for it because the property taxes, you know, our property taxes are about $19,000 a year on our house, and we don't have kids left in the public schools. So, you know, I think that if you went to a graduated tax, it really would impact the livability of middle class people in Illinois.
That's a great
point. And so
that's a great
so
point.
I
Thanks,
appreciate
Chris.
It. Thanks for the
Thanks.
Conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for calling, man. I love it. I love that you can have various people from various parts of our listening area talk about their lives and their perspective. Because I don't think that's going to be represented. What Chris and what Jefferson are talking about, it's not going to be represented in the ads that you see that are produced by the governor. Or maybe even in the anti-ads. But there's something to be said, and I don't think it's being said enough, that, you know, when you talk about someone who might be living in DuPage County or Lake County, as Chris was living in, that's a serious problem, that the real estate market has changed for that area. And Chicago in particular as well. There's some hot spots. Of course, it's always going to be the case in Chicago. But Chicago lags behind the United States for whatever reason. And then you include the suburbs as well. So to be in a position where your equity and your long-term outlook is already affected by a market. And then on top of it, to hear politicians say, you're the one who's going to get taxed more, you rich, richy rich. I can understand why that's not something that people take lightly, right? 630 says other pensioners have taken a hit in other bankruptcies and company closes. United Airlines after 9/11, many others. No need to take it all away. Just cap it like they do with Social Security. I'd like to see my check stub a separate pension tax deduction so I know what percent I'm paying into my pension. That's good.
I left Illinois in 2015, says 630. After looking for a job for 18 months, I couldn't find one. I was making what I was making. I expanded my search and found work in Minnesota, making 30% more. Property taxes much lower, but they make up the revenue in other ways. Overall, my quality of life is much improved, but I do miss Chicago dearly. My $220,000 townhome in Minnesota has a property tax of $1,500, but my license plates were $400. Interesting. So they're going to get it. I guess the moral of that story is they're going to get it, just how they get it. Yeah. 630 says, lots of younger folks have moved out of the state because of taxes and cost of living. They keep going up. Younger people haven't had the time to establish their careers and make six figures. It makes more sense to move somewhere that's reasonable. Yeah. And obviously there's going to be anecdotal stories to everybody's story. So it's hard to speak in big swaths. But it's a, I'm a talk show host, so let's do it. I just wonder, and I think it was, I forgot already, I forgot who it was. I think it was Tony, but I could be wrong. He called in and he was talking about, you know, people leave Illinois. It's not the rich. A lot of times they're leaving no matter what because they want to go hide their money somewhere. If you're really rich, you're going to go to states that don't have any income tax or are better for your banking situation, whatever it might be. But when we see these mass exodus numbers from the state of Illinois, and everyone says it's the taxes, it's the city, it's the politicians, it's the corruption, all of that may be true, but the people that are leaving, especially the Chicago area, not just the state of Illinois, but Chicago, don't have resources. They don't have money. They don't have $250,000. They might be doing it because the city's too expensive. They may be doing it because the city's not safe. They may be doing it because they need a different setting. But far too often we act like the only people that are leaving are people who are affected by the taxes. Oh, you know what? These middle class high earners are leaving because they don't like that Governor Pritzker might put another $100 on their bill. I don't know. I'm talking in big paint strokes here. The poor, as 773 says, they can't pay the daily taxes in Chicago or Cook County. 815 says, do teachers pay into Social Security? They do not. There are some situations that they do have to figure that out. And you heard one of the callers say that in Wisconsin they do that. But that was the whole deal. And correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of listeners out there know more than I do on this. But the old deal was that if you worked for the state or you worked for the city or you worked in service jobs like police, fire, or teachers, you took less money. And you didn't pay in the Social Security, and they created a pension system to pay you back when your service was complete. And that is what we are seeing. And so there are firemen and police officers and people who worked in county and state municipalities and city municipalities, city workers and streets and sands, things like that. And there's also teachers. And teachers, you know, they chose a work to provide service to give back to their communities. They are teaching our youth. And the deal they make to make less money and to not have Social Security paid out to them when they retire is they will get a pension when they're done. So they're paying into their own pension. It got out of whack. And as one caller pointed out, rightfully so, it got out of whack when in the 80s and 90s, politicians started saying, we got all this money over here for pensions. You know what? What if we borrowed it for roads? Or what if we just borrowed it for a couple of months so we can handle paying down this? What if we borrowed it for a big Christmas party? And that's the problem we have right now. And I think Chris is right as well, saying that we also have a problem that we are outliving what the pension was designed to do. That you're not in a position where you're living 20 years, you're living 40 or 50. And it wasn't designed to continue to pay you out because at a certain point, all you're getting is you already paid in
You already got back what you paid in. You're just getting the percentages that were paid in by your employer, or in this case, the state. Let's take a break. Take a break. I got people on the line. I got some texting in. We'll do this for another 10 after the break, and we'll move on. I got a great story I want to talk about at 9 o'clock hour. I need your help on this one. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman, stay with us. Laughing at 773. Says, life expectancy, it doesn't change that much. Teachers make their pay in about 4 years. Since when is life expectancy 60? That's a good point, right? We're acting like, well, now people are living much longer. Like back in the 70s and 80s, we're like, they're only going to live till they're 58. It's not. This isn't the 19th century. It's not Civil War time. 312-981-7200. The problem, Justin, was not borrowing from the pension fund. The problem is the state did not make the required contributions to the pension fund. Good point. Thank you. See, I'm so smart. Absolutely true. It's the same concept, but you're right. I wasn't borrowing from that money. They were just not. They were taking the money that they needed to pay in, and they were putting it elsewhere. And then saying, nothing to see here, folks. The 90s are great. So let's go to the old St. Pat's block party. It's the 90s. Let's go get a drink at Bar Louie. See that today? Old St. Pat's and Bar Louie, both ending. It's like a piece of the 90s. Chicago has vanished. John, what's your thought? John, what do you think about people living?
Well, here's the thing. I live in Indiana. I live in Highland, which is right across, 2 miles across the border.
Yeah, I know Highland.
And what's going on is my manager, her and her husband, listed their house on a Friday. Full offer, sold on Sunday. Mm. If you're within a half hour of the state line, you can sell your house instantly for people from Illinois.
And that's awesome, but I would also make an argument that, you know, Indiana's a nice place. So I don't think, was there a point in Highland's life that wasn't happening? People like those areas, Highland and Valpo and Chesterton and those kind of areas.
It is. It's a nice place, but it is now, you're not selling to another person from Indiana. Yeah, literally people, if you're within a half hour of the state line, you know, it's people from Illinois are going to be your strongest buyers.
There you go. Thanks, John.
All right. Take care.
Take care. That's a good point. But it's 30 minutes out. It's becoming harder and harder to find affordable real estate 30 minutes out of Chicago. So I could see why people like that area. I like Northwest Indiana. They got a lot going for it. 773 says, took a reduction in pay, but that was 25 plus years ago. Today, most government and city and CPS officials, they're paid well. So 25 years ago, you took less in pay to get a pension. But now, in the last 15 years or so, you're getting paid well. So the whole deal is a little bit out of whack. It's a good point. Good conversation tonight. Well, we'll see. I'm interested to see what. I always like to have these conversations, right, to preview the state of the state, and we'll all watch it together. Just like yesterday, we were talking about red light cameras. Then today, you hear the governor talking about, well, maybe there won't be red light cameras anymore. I'm like, a listener. Yes. The same here. I can't wait to hear the state of the state tomorrow and then be like, yeah. That's what Jefferson was talking about. That's what Joe was talking about. That's what 630 was talking about. Tomorrow. Is it at noon? I think it's noon. So God forbid, they don't do prime time down there, you know. That budget address might be prime time. But they don't like to do prime time. Who likes to do prime time in Springfield? Everything closes by 8 o'clock, so what's the point? I mentioned quickly, as we before we break to go to Vic Vaughn's news, I mentioned that, a piece of the 90s. Do you see that story today? Pete saw that. The old St. Pat's block party, which was deemed the world's biggest block party. It was for singles to mingle, presumably of the Catholic faith, but you didn't have to be. It was at the right by the expressway or old St. Pat's, a church that survived the Chicago fire, by the way. I know that from the history project I'm working on with my son. He's doing the work. I'm the consultant on the project. Which just means, did you do that? And he goes, no. And I go, oh, man. Hope you get a good grade. I got to go do radio. But Old St. Pat's block party was a big deal, and they said it's done. They're going to do something on St. Patrick's Day instead or something like that.
I talked to them tonight, Justin.
You did? Were they?
I talked to Brian Comer. He's the co-event chair. The one thing I wanted to ask was why. What was behind the decision? Mm-hmm. And he said, if you go back to 35 years ago when they started it, the church has changed tremendously, not only in size, which it has changed vastly larger, the congregation, than it was then, but the dynamics of it. He said now there are a lot of families with children. You know, so, like you hit the nail on the head with
single mingle.
So, yeah.
Right?
So they've got this shamrock in the block is what they're going to call it.
The bigger question I have, Vic, this is the question I would ask. Is the band Big Head Todd and the Monsters, are they mad?
I asked that question.
They lose that gig?
That's great.
That was always a fun part of the Old St. Pat's block parties, which 90s indie rock band was going to play.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. They're still going to have music. They're still going to have booze, and it'll be a... Yeah.
I'm just worried about Big Head Todd. Why wouldn't you be worried about those guys? You know, I just want to make sure they're getting their money. Coming to the block party. And the other story from the 90s that came out today that I have a little bit of fanfare, even though I wasn't a huge fan of that bar, Bar Louie, the national bar and grill chain, declared bankruptcy, and they're closing their 38 bar grills, Bar Louies across the nation, two in the Chicagoland area. One in the north side of Chicago, the other in Naperville. The end of Bar Louie. Remember when Bar Louie came to Chicago? It was in the 90s. It was almost sacrilegious in a way because they kind of came in as a national brand. Ooh, Bar Louie. And they would be in different... That was at the time when there weren't as many chains anywhere. And so when there was a Bar Louie in Bucktown and you'd have a Bar Louie in Wrigleyville, you're like, for shame. How have you... Was this the Wendy's of sports bars? You can't do that. And then after a while, you just lose other options. You're like, yeah, I guess Bar Louie's good. We'll go to Bar Louie. They got burgers there. We'll go to Bar Louie. I just feel like it's a, kind of the 90s. A piece of 90s Chicago has disappeared. The Old St. Pat's block party and Bar Louie today. And I'm worried, you know. Worried what's the next shoe to fall. It's usually in threes, right? Maybe that's the question. Maybe that's what we should do the rest of the show on. What would you be worried about if something from the 90s went away tomorrow? I'm trying to think of a good reference, pop culture reference to pull. That's very 90s in Chicago. You know, Sammy Sosa. Next thing you tell me, if Sammy Sosa leaves Chicago. Oh, he already has. 8630 says there's also a Bar Louie in the Geneva Commons. Maybe they're keeping that one open. I only saw that there were two. They said Naperville and Chicago. Maybe they're keeping some open. Yeah. Anyway, that's coming up. Or we're done talking about that. Let's talk about Carol Stream. You want to do this in the 9 o'clock hour? I want to do this. Did you see the story yesterday? It was in the obituary section for the Chicago Tribune that Carol Stream, a woman from Phoenix, died at the age of 77. And yes, she's the namesake. Her father named the town, Carol Stream, after her. We'll tell that story. And hopefully, you, WGN radio listeners, can give us a little bit of background in your specific town. Now I'm totally confused. I'm totally curious. Who's the Downers in Downers Grove? Is there a Mr. Orland for Orland Park? Did Johnny Woodstock... found Woods? I don't know. The minute I saw that story, I'm like, oh my gosh, there are origin stories for all of the towns in our area, and I don't know any of them. I barely know Chicago, and again, it was a history project about, you know, right here, DuSable and Kinsey, downtown Chicago. But let's talk about origin stories in the towns you live. You can tell the origin story of your town. 312-981-7200. Also, a little bit later in the show, Super Bowl Sunday, kids got a petition. How about Super Bowl Saturday from here on out? I love it. Why do we do these games on Sunday? Why is it Sunday night that we all have to drag ourselves to work on Monday?
Wouldn't it be better to have it on a Saturday night so everybody has Sunday off to recuperate? Think of the leftovers alone. Love that conversation as well. Justin Kaufman with you on 720 WGN. Vic Vaughn's news is coming up. And then, yeah, let's talk about Carol Stream. Or Downers. Mr. Downers. Mr. Orland. Mr. Woodstock. Whatever. 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. 312 is saying, come on. Aren't we missing enough Mondays from work? You know if we move the Super Bowl to Saturday, it'll just create a three-day binge. It's so true. It's just goofy that we abide by a bunch of drunkards. This country's already, it already has enough problems getting work done on Mondays and late Fridays. Oh, boy. We got a curmudgeon on our hands. A real curmudgeon-y there. First, I was like, well, I'm with you. Now you're like, we're the government, we need more people to work. You, Potter Palmer over there? We need, like, the bad guy in It's a Wonderful Life. The banker. Potts, is that what it was? Potter. All right, 312-981-7200, the phone number. All right, let's get into this story about Carol Stream. I love this story. Yesterday, it was an obit in the Tribune, and I saw the story about Carol Stream. The wonderful suburb just to the northwest of Chicago, you know, where I have family that's there. Huh, who doesn't like Carol Stream? But then I saw it wasn't about the town. It was about the woman. Carol Stream of Arizona died at the age of 77. Her father, he named the town Carol Stream back in the 50s. He wanted to build a subdivision in Naperville. But there was too much red tape, so he just went a few miles over and just started a brand new town. Why not? And he said, what am I going to call this? Streamville? No. I'll name it after my lovely daughter, Carol. Carol Stream. But this story made me think of all the towns, all the suburbs and the neighborhoods in our area. Let's have some fun here. Let's have a fun hour. Tell me, what is your town's name's origin story? Where's it come from? I grew up in Wonder Lake. I know where Wonder Lake came from, the lake. But did you know that Wonder Lake's a man-made lake? I barely did. Not sure that I even know what that means. Let's start it off with Paul. Paul, where do you live, Paul?
Yes, I live in Stager right now, but I grew up in Chicago Heights. Okay. And I'm 68 years old.
Okay.
The town's called Madison.
Yep.
People call it, and it drives me nuts, they call it Matson.
I would have said that. I would have said Matson, but right. It's Madison, well, right.
Back in the... I believe it was the late 1800s. It was the governor of Illinois at the time when Madison became a town. And it was named after that governor of Illinois. His name was Matteson.
Oh, that's interesting to know. And you're absolutely right, because I always say Matson. And it's Madison, yeah. You're right.
Right.
And also very interesting that today, if you're like a successful politician or something, there's nothing else. There's nothing left to name. They got to build libraries for you. Back in Madison's day, he gets old town, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That's great right there, right? That's what I'm talking about. I have a list of all the municipalities in the Illinois area. So I will go through everyone. If we don't answer all of the questions of where these towns came from, I'm just going to make up stories. Right? Let's go to Dave. Dave. You there, Dave?
Yeah, greetings from north of the border here in Wisconsin.
Hey, I live
in Cudahy, Wisconsin.
Cudahy.
Cudahy, and it was founded by Patrick Cudahy about 135 years ago, and the city was named after Patrick Cudahy, who still has the meatpacking plant there.
Is that what he was doing? Is that what Patrick Cudahy did? He was a meatpacker?
Yes, bacon.
Bacon.
Bacon, salami, pepperoni, that's what we make now. I work there currently.
Oh, really? That's great. Yep. So is that a sense of pride? Is there, not unlike Harvard has milk days, is there meat days or bacon days or cut-a-hay days?
That's one of the city's logos is Generations of Pride.
Yeah.
And our sweet Applewood Fest in Cudahy, it's named after the applewood that we use to smoke the bacon with.
You're the best, Dave. Thanks for the call.
We've been here a while.
I love it. I love it. Cudahy, Wisconsin. That was not on my list. But I dig it, right? Now I know. I can't wait to go to Cudahy. It'd be great to get a little field trip together. We'll go down there. All right. Carl Scherer, first-generation American of German immigrant parents, born in Jefferson Park. 60630 has been my zip code for 52 years. Schererville, Indiana, anybody? I'm waiting for that story as well. Carl wants to know, Schererville, why is Schererville named Schererville? Because he's got, of course, a stake in the game with the last name Scherer. I'll find out for you, Carl. Hopefully we'll get some answers. All right. 708 says, I'm with the curmudgeon, though. Everyone's looking for a way to get out of working. Yeah, but it's about moving it to Saturday. We'll get to that conversation coming up. 815 says, ha, how about Plainfield? What's the origin of the name Plainfield? That's great. All right, let's try Chris. Chris, you got some information about Wonder Lake, huh?
Yes, absolutely. I'm on the west side, what they call Wonder Bama. Now they call, if the east side is where you're from, that's Wonder Tucky, correct?
I hate that. Someone said it to me, too. They're like, hey, you're from Wonder Tucky. I'm like, yeah, you don't get to say that. We get to say that.
Were you the east side or the west side?
East side. I'm east side, yeah.
So you went to, McHenry West?
I went to McHenry West. My beach
and
was
Harrison,
yep, Harrison School. Harrison. My beach was the Swing Beach.
So right on. Right there, Center Beach.
Yep. So
right by Horton Connells.
Yep. So tell me.
Free advertisement for Mr. Henley there.
There you go. So what did Wonder Lake used to be?
It used to just be farm field. And allegedly the soil was dead, so they just started digging it out, and now here this is what we got now. Silt.
The lake is man-made lake, and it's not the most becoming lake. I remember that. I don't know if maybe they cleaned it up over time, but it was kind of had the that 80s kind of pollution to it.
They've been dredging it for the last 5 years, allegedly. But what's that going to do? It's fed by the Nipper Sink, and that's the Nipper Stink.
That's great. Thanks, Chris.
You know what I mean, man?
I do.
All right, brother.
Thanks for the call. The Nipper Stink. That's the creek. I guess it's a river, but it's a creek. Creek in our head, right? 312-981-7200. We're trying to get to the bottom of origin stories for the towns. After I saw this great obit on the woman, Carol Stream was a real woman who died at the age of 77 out in Arizona. Her father named Carol Stream after her. When he got denied to do just too much red tape over a subdivision in Naperville. So he just walked a couple miles down and said, you know what, this is where I'll set up my town, and I'll name it after my daughter. Carol Stream. I love that story. All right, I got a ton of stuff coming in. Batavia, we'll talk with some people. We've got calls are lighting up. Pete's busy right now. Hey, Pete, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll get to the people on the line as well as the text. Give us your town's origin story, 720 WGN. We are trying to find out the origin stories of all the towns and municipalities in this area. Cudahy, we've gotten, which was an awesome story about a meat packer, Patrick Cudahy. The governor of Illinois at the time, Matteson, M-A-T-T-E-S-O-N, maybe two S's in there. He founded Matteson, Illinois, which many pronounce Matson. It's Matteson. Let's keep going. This is all off the obit I saw on Monday of Carol Stream, who's actually a real woman, who died at the age of 77 in Phoenix. And the obit was, she was the namesake. Her father created Carol Stream. He wanted to do a subdivision in Naperville. It was too much red tape, so he just moved and bought land on the other side, and he started his own town in the 50s. And he named it after his daughter, Carol Stream. Not at all how I thought the origin story of Carol Stream. I thought there would be a stream somewhere in that conversation. Ah, yeah. You want to rent a boat and go down Carol Stream? No, it's a real person. Susan's got the story of Romeoville. Susan,
Tell me.
Hello.
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So when I moved to Romeoville, some of the information about the city was that it's, you know, very close to Joliet. And
right.
Apparently Joliet started as Juliet and Romeoville started as Romeo.
Is
so
that
we had
real?
Romeo and Juliet. Yes, that's what they have in the history of Romeoville.
That's amazing.
And then I know, I just thought it was cute, and I remembered it all this time, and then when you had this topic, I'm like, okay, I don't know the original origin, but I know the name change. So then, apparently, the story goes, Juliet changed the name to Joliet, the city of Juliet changed to Joliet, and Romeo got mad, the city of Romeo, but Romeo got mad, so they changed it to Romeoville. I know, it's just too funny.
It's just like the play.
Yes,
right.
It's a tragedy.
It's
and the fact
right.
that I live in Romeoville for so many years is also a tragedy.
Oh, come on now, Susan. All right, thanks for the call.
I know.
That was awesome.
It's lovely. All right,
lovely.
Thank you.
Care.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. How great is that story? Do you think that's real? I mean, regardless, if it's not, it's an awesome story. Romeo and Juliet, the two neighboring towns. They could do like an indie film about that. Call it Romeo and Julietville. Romeoville and Joliet. That's amazing. Let's go to Fred. Fred, you got some yes. origin stories on Hammond?
Yes, I've lived in Hammond for 66 years, and it's a lot of people don't even realize it borders Chicago, Burnham, Calumet mm-hmm. City, and Lansing, all along the state line. It was named after George Hammond, who started a meatpacking company on the Calumet River and right off the state line. And whenever they had labor disputes in the Chicago meatpackers, they would come down to work at the Hammond plant. And when there was a dispute there, the guys would go up there. But George also developed the first refrigerated car for meat. But the problem was his meat was hanging in the car and it would start swinging and end up tipping the cars over. So they ended up going with a design from the Swift Meat Company.
Okay.
And then we have an area in Hammond called Hessville, which was named after Joseph Hess, who was one of the founder of that area. Munster, which is next to Hammond, was named after Jacob Munster,
okay.
one of the settlers. Highland was a high land, basically. It runs along Ridge Road, which at one time was a beach for Lake Michigan.
Yeah, that's so great.
A lot of this information comes from a book called Calumet Beginnings by Dr. Kenneth Shoon, who was an instructor at IU Northwest. My sister, when she was working on her master's, worked with him. And he worked with Jeffrey Bean on the public TV series about the South Suburbs.
Jeffrey Bear, right.
Jeffrey Bear, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Very interesting. The first part of the book is real dry. It's about geology, which he was a geologist. But the rest of it covers all the little suburbs south of Chicago. Not too much in Indiana, but mostly in the Illinois area. And it's, I mean, just chock full of information.
Very cool. Thank you.
That's where I got most of it from.
I love it. Thanks, Fred. Thanks for telling us all about it. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
All right. Okay.
All right. It seems so far that most of the towns in this area are named after meatpacking. Yeah. Meatpackers, I guess, is the correct way to say that. That's great. Now we just got a Northwest Indiana lesson there, Pete. I'll take that. Mundelein was a Catholic cardinal. That makes sense. I've heard that. I still can't get over the Romeoville and Juliet. Another texter texted in and said, yes, I've heard that story as well. I live in Romeoville. I've lived there since 1969, and I've heard that story as well. I love that story. I don't know how that... Maybe that's in Jeffrey Bear does all the stuff for TTW. Maybe I haven't seen the South Suburbs one. But that's an awesome story, right? If it's not in the documentary, he's got some splaining to do. It probably is. All right, 312-981-7200. 815 says, there's going to be a new town. Well, down on Highway 34, halfway between Plano and Sandwich. The new town's going to be called Bologna. So you'll have Plano Bologna Sandwich. Oh, that's so good. Thank you, Alfredo. We walked right into that. Naperville is named after Joseph Naperville, who founded the area in the 1800s. They settled it, which is the famous Naper settlement. You get a lot of that, right? You'll get a lot of settlers. I get the idea of people coming in and settling. The Carol Stream story is amazing because it's named after a daughter. And I think Romeoville and Joliet is an awesome story as well. Let's keep going. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Nancy. You got something on Downers Grove, right?
Yes, I do.
All right, give it to us.
Downers Grove was founded by Pierce Downer. And there is actually an underground railroad in Downers Grove. And it it goes to his house. It's kind of obliterated, you know, a couple of blocks later. But for the most part, it goes right to Pierce Downer's house. And he had some involvement in the Underground Railroad.
Wow, that's interesting. So he settled that town, I'm assuming.
He did settle the town. Yeah, and you know, an interesting tidbit, I deliver Meals on Wheels, and I used to deliver to an elderly couple, and I'm a retired nurse, and the Senior Citizens Council wanted me to go to their house because they had cancer and didn't want to eat everything. Turned out that she was a relative of Pierce Downer, and she gave me two dolls that belonged to Pierce Downer's daughter.
I should save that for the swap meet tomorrow. Find out how much those are worth, right?
You know, what I did was I peeled them off my grubby little hands and gave them to the Historical Society.
Yeah, that's
but
smart.
I kept them for a long time, but it killed me.
that's probably the smarter, nicer thing to do.
Yeah, but Helen Downer owned it.
Yeah, that's nice. Thanks, Nancy. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the history lesson. There you go. Pierce Downer. I think Pierce Grove would be better than Downers Grove. Batavia, named from Batavia, New York. A local judge moved here in 1840. He was from Batavia, New York, so he just named it Batavia. Yeah. Classic New Yorker. Eight 847 says Skokie comes from the Potawatomi term for those who can't afford to buy in Evanston. That's good. I like it. There's some good jokes about the towns. I'm fascinated by this. I could do this all night, just based on the obit we saw from the actual woman who was named Carol Stream. And there's so many other awesome stories. I feel enlightened already because I had no idea about Joliet and Romeoville and that it used to be Juliet and Romeo, Romeo and Juliet. And then there was a little bit of rivalry where they got mad when Juliet changed it to Joliet. So Romeo said, you know what? We're changing it too. Romeoville. Julia, you got some story about Wheaton. You there, Julia?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Wheaton and another guy whose name was Gary, the same Gary as Gary, Indiana, decided that they were going to approach the railroad and say, if you name the railroad station after Wheaton, then he would give a deal for downtown commercial lots to be sold at a lower cost, and the right-of-way that should have been up near North Avenue going east and west would then be the railroad station of Wheaton. So
that's how Wheaton got. All right, okay.
Right, and then also for Carol Stream, I read in the newspaper many years ago that J Stream, that's the developer of the dad, his daughter Carol either was in an accident or was very ill from an illness, from a disease. Anyway, he said if she lived, then he would name the development that he was already doing after her. So that's how Carol Stream
got it. That's how it came about,
yeah. Because she lived. I don't know if that's in the obituary or not.
No, it wasn't in the obituary. She lived to 77, too, so she went
out. Right, so she obviously, And Winfield, Illinois, which is the first town west of Wheaton, was named after Winfield Scott. But people don't know that he was a military person, but he also was well known for killing women and children who were Indians.
Yikes.
So the last one is Army Trail Road, which goes east and west. It's very wide, and it's unusual to have such a wide road
for so many years. And that was because it became the road that the Army used to remove the indigenous First People or Native Americans going from east to west.
Oh.
So it was wide enough to put horses of the military on each side and have the indigenous Indians in the middle as they forced them to go west.
Wow.
But places like Half Day Road or Caldwell were named after Native Americans who then cooperated or warned for impending different kinds of wars or maybe
right.
a ambush right. that were going to happen, and they warned the surrounding settlers.
Wow, this is great. Thank you, Julia. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Thanks to all the listeners tonight. Wow, see, you just open it up and you get a little history lesson on the towns that are around. I feel like I got a road trip coming up. Hanny, give us the last word. Lamont.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm
so,
good.
This is Hanny from Lamont. So, Lamont's basically a town that had a couple of names before it became Lamont. It basically started out as a town with a post office. It first went through the names Athens, Palmyra, until it became Lamont, obviously meaning the mountain in French.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Where's
very,
the mountain,
very
though?
Nice, simple. It's actually the whole neighborhood's a mountain.
Oh, okay.
It's probably one of the only, suburb in Southwest that's mountainous.
I didn't know that. It's interesting, too.
It also has another name.
What's the other name?
Village of Faith, probably because of the abundance of churches in the neighborhood.
Oh, that's good. I also
and
would say
oddly
that,
enough.
Go ahead, one more.
Go ahead.
No,
go
I was just saying, I think it's funny that it's a French, Le Mans is a French word, but we're in Chicago. It's like Lamont.
Lamont, Des Plaines.
Des Plaines. Right, right. All right, thanks. Thanks, Annie. Appreciate that. There you go. Some great stuff tonight. 312-981-7200. Texts are coming in as well, but I'm going to take a break here. And I want to get to our Super Bowl Saturday conversation, too, which I think is where we'll go next, about whether or not you would co-sign. And the idea of moving this darn football game to Saturdays instead of Sundays. Would that cause more problems, less problems? I like it. This kid is doing it. He's got a petition. Let's talk about it. 720 WGM. All right. So Don, this is a good one. Don says Elgin. It's named after the Scottish tune, Elgin. Two Scots founded the town. He grew up there on the west side. Also, South Holland, named when the Dutch tried to reach Holland, Michigan, and missed. So it was South Holland. Good stuff. All right, so let's talk about Super Bowl Saturday. A young man, I think it's like a 15, 16-year-old teenager, is pushing a petition, which has thousands of signatures right now, to move the Super Bowl to Saturday. There's no reason for the Super Bowl to be on Sunday, since it airs late and forces everyone back to work or school the next day, especially on the East Coast. Maybe not so much on the West Coast. But Saturday would be such a better day. It would give people the time to properly celebrate the biggest event in sports and the time to properly recuperate from the biggest game in sports. What do you think of the idea? I like it. I understand that football is played on Sunday. But they have changed that. And I think this is partially where it gets fun, this conversation, because I feel like if any purists out there, we talked about baseball last night, we'll talk about football tonight. If any purists are like, it's Sunday, it's got to be Sunday. Well, the NFL messed with that. Now there's a game on Thursday. Now, of course, Monday Night Football. At the end of the year, they're playing Saturday. They got the playoff games on Saturday. There is no purist anymore when it comes to the NFL. NFL has tried to rake as much cash as they could off every single day. I guarantee in 3 years, they're going to be Friday, Wednesday, Tuesday. They're going to do every night. Why wouldn't they? They're going to spread that out. So the idea that it has to be on Sunday is garbage. The NFL, the league itself, has already proven to us that Sunday is not sacred to them. So why should it be sacred to us? Why should they play their final game that's going to be this huge, massive event on Sunday? So that we have to start thinking about the next day, Monday at work, the whole thing, by halftime. Once J-Lo gets off stage on Sunday night, it's going to be like, oh, man, what am I going to wear tomorrow? I'm sure there's some reasoning they do it, and I'm sure there's some business reason they get to stretch it out one more day, but I will be one who will tell the officials at the NFL that by stretching out the Super Bowl for 2 weeks, you may think that it's building anticipation. You may think that it's good for business because people are consuming Media Day and other goofy things that are happening in Miami, but it's not. I could care less. No one listening cares. We want the Super Bowl to be played. It doesn't matter that it takes this long. And I get why they do it. They want the Pro Bowl and that, you know, spread it out. And obviously they want to make a big party. And I was watching one sports show talking about how they have to bring apparatuses for both teams down. I get the idea of 2 weeks. I'll give you that. But an extra day? Put it on Saturday. They are? Steve. Steve, are you in? Are you in with me, Steve, on a Super Bowl Saturday?
No, Super Bowl should be on Sunday. If you can't watch a football game till 9:30 at night, then maybe watch the news and go to bed. Something's wrong with your priorities.
But they actually end the game a little bit earlier than 9, right? It's like usually like 8:30 or something like that.
Yeah.
But the problem is that you lead the whole day up, and then you get to a certain point, and you have to unwind because a lot of people got to be to work by 9. You know, so they're not thinking about why shortchange the viewer's experience where maybe they can have another Bud Light, or maybe they can have another, you know, plate of nachos, not have to worry about how it's going to affect them the next morning.
Well, I don't know. It's just wrong. And if you can't stay up till midnight and still get up at 7, then you just need to give up watching sports.
Thanks, Steve.
All right.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong. I love the idea, this is 630, I love the idea of a Saturday night Super Bowl. When they have the playoff games on Saturday nights, our bar, this is obviously a bar owner, works in a steakhouse. When they have it on Saturday nights, the bars are packed. So when the game is on, a lot of the guys won't come down to their table till it's over. No, it's true. Why not have it Saturday night? Say it could be the same time. You could do it at 5:30, have the game start at 5:30 or 6 o'clock on a Saturday night. Super Bowl Saturday, 630 says, sign me up. Super Bowl Saturday, love it. Totally in, says 262. All for a Super Bowl on Saturday, says 630. Look at that. I'm quit your whining and complaining. I was just about to say it. Everybody's in. It's unanimous. Then I get 773 and says, quit your whining and complaining. I get up at 5 a.m. and I go to work and I will watch the Super Bowl on Sunday. Yeah, but I don't know. There's something about like what the argument is, you're not tough. Oh, quit your whining and be tough like me. Get up early. But what if, and just hear me out here, you didn't have to get up early. What if you had a whole Sunday to recuperate? 847 says, I'm with the kids, Super Bowl Saturday. I don't know what it would take, and I'm sure, hopefully someone can text in or call in, 312-981-7200, to say the reason they do it on Sunday is because of this and that and that and business and business and money and money and business and so much money. Because that's what someone's inevitably going to tell me. The NFL has some arrangement with whoever made Sunday. Whenever the founding fathers of the days of the week, or what we're going to call them, the NFL was at that table. And they're like, we have dibs on Sunday? I saw that the Chicago Bulls play on Sunday afternoon opposite the Raptors, or opposite the Super Bowl against the Raptors in Toronto. Because I was thinking, oh, maybe we'll go over there and watch a game, but they're not in town. But I was like, what? The NBA doing games counter
programming. And of course, it's the Bulls. I digress. One real quick point. I don't want to come across crass, and I know this will. Should probably keep my mouth shut. But last night, you saw, and we started this show talking about Kobe Bryant and how it's amazing to me that the world is not moving on or forgetting Kobe Bryant. It's amazing. It's emotional to see how international cities and this amazing mural in the Philippines that they have in their square. I forget which city it is. It's an amazing mural they're creating in all these different towns. It reminds me a lot of what we talked about last night, like John Lennon. But the NBA did this amazing thing on the night that Kobe passed, his daughter and the seven other people on the helicopter, where they did shot clock violations, 24 seconds to honor. Both teams did. That was unbelievable. I've never seen that in sports before. Now, all the teams that played on Sunday did that. But the Bulls played on Monday. And I'm just saying, there was something really great about that being such a moment. So the fleet of games on Monday, I think it was the Minnesota Timberwolves, they took the ball. Andrew Wiggins took the ball, and he put it on the free throw line. And it was in the Target Center in Minnesota, and it's where Kobe Bryant broke the record for as many points, or I forgot what the record was. Some significant, I think he passed Jordan. I think, isn't Bryant above Jordan? And so there was some significance to him doing that, like putting the ball on the free throw line. I thought that was just classy. There's no significance in the Bulls and whoever they played last night, the Spurs, doing the same thing, the 24-second violation or the 8-second violation. I get it, and like I said, I don't want people to get mad at me for being crass or being insensitive, but since, you know, you got a day to plan, come up with something. They did the video tribute, which is nice, but to just copy what the raw emotion of what the basketball players did on Sunday night, just copy it on Monday. I'm like, when does it stop? They going to do that tonight too? Do it on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? Is this going to be the new thing that the first possession is just a violation? Anyway, back to the Super Bowl. Sorry, everybody. Because I don't want to get off track because people will be like, oh, too soon. Super Bowl on Saturday. Absolutely, says 773. Even I would watch a game, and I don't like football. Yes to Saturday. How about this idea, says 847? Why not play the first half on Saturday and then the second half on Sunday? It takes about a day and a half to play the game anyway. I love that idea. I'm with you on that one. You guessed it, Justin, says 708. Bars and restaurants are going to get an extra night of revenue on Sunday, which is usually a pretty dead night. So you think that that's what it's about? You think that the NFL's being charitable because they know that bars and restaurants support their game? And so they're giving them an extra night. They know their Saturday's going to be packed, so they do it on Sunday. Something tells me that conglomerate that is the NFL doesn't give a rat's behind about the bars that carry their games. 815 says, I remember when the Super Bowl was at 2:30 or 3:30 on Sundays. An excellent time to have a party and still get home to recover. I think 3:30 would be an excellent time to start. I agree with the 815. I think if they start the game at 5, I think it's a 5 o'clock start. You're right. 3:30 would be great. We're used to that, too. I've had a problem with the playoffs where they continue to start. Like, they started the NFC Championship game in San Francisco at 5:30 on a Sunday, the same time that the Super Bowl will be this Sunday. And they did it the week before with the divisional playoffs. They are trying to emulate the idea of football at night, the 5 o'clock hours, but Saturday and Sunday. And I don't remember them ever doing it. I remember the NFC champ, and my brother told me I was wrong, but maybe I'm thinking back 10, 15 years now. But it used to be like maybe a 12 p.m. start for the AFC championship game and maybe a 4 o'clock start for the Packers and the Cowboys in 1995 or whatever it is. Now they've shifted that to where they're trying to get prime time on Sunday. That Niners-Packers game wasn't over till 9 o'clock. Strange. Anyway. 815 says, I've had jobs at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 1 p.m., or 3:30 p.m. If someone wants to watch and party for anything, they just need to learn to adjust. Hmm. A lot of 630 just says pretentious. This conversation is pretentious, talking about changing.
Yes, hi. I am an erudite college professor, and I would like to suggest that perhaps we play the exhibition that is known as football on the Saturday instead of the Sunday. I have some research and some books, if I can get my papers. If you just give me a second to get these papers, I will explain to you what the research tells me.
I like 262's idea. Make Monday a holiday. Super Hangover Monday. That was the first comment. Remember, the first comment we had on this was the idea that all it's going to do is perpetuate, it's going to make a three-day weekend. Then maybe the game will be on Saturday, but they'll create something on Sunday. We'll still be late to work. We'll still be groggy on Monday, regardless, if they put the game on Saturday. And the last one on here, the NFL 847 says, will most certainly never move the game from its current day. With the game on a Sunday, the Super Bowl has produced 9 of the 10 most watched television shows in history. Oof. Darn it. Ratings. You're right. As our president told us last week about the beginning of the impeachment hearings, Saturday's Death Valley for TV. That's what he tweeted out. He was mad that his defense was starting on a Saturday because of the ratings. So, yeah, maybe you're absolutely right. That's a good point. Well, it was worth a shot. You're right. They're never going to change it. If they own 9 of the 10 most televised moments in television history, they're not going to change it. They know they got something great on Sunday, but I would say that maybe they do 2 Super Bowls. I like the idea. The first half on Saturday, the second half on Sunday. Saturday, they get done. They do halftime, becomes a thing. Then they take a break. Then they go. It's just like a 12-hour halftime. I think that would work. All right. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll tee up what's next here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Coming up, I want to get some people on the line, and I want to play a game about the most trusted brands in America. There's a new study out that talks about the most trusted brands. Some may surprise you. Some are pretty obvious. But again, I think more will surprise you. So if you want to call up, we'll do it after the 10 o'clock news. I want to get you on the line and play like kind of a news or ruse. I'll name 3 and you got to pick 2 or something like that. That sound good? We'll give you a prize. 312-981-7200. Before we get to that, though, we'll do that coming up at 10 o'clock, as well as talk about some lifestyle reports as well that are out, which are really interesting about stress that most moms and most... the story is husbands are stressing out wives more than the kids. So study is out. A survey, 7,000 moms found on average that they rate their levels of stress super high. And 46% of them say it's because of their husbands, not because of their kids. Do you find that stat to be true? Talk about that coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Back to Kobe. Yesterday we had talked about Kobe Bryant and whether or not you shed a tear over... his untimely passing. And I was kind of talked that, and we talked about really more about the idea that why do we grieve for celebrities that we don't know? I'm blown away, and I really am. You know, I'm a basketball fan and I like Kobe Bryant. I really did. I underestimated his impact. Because if you look at the way that the city of Los Angeles has responded, they have that massive memorial that's outside the Staples Center right now. My friend Adam just texted us a picture of a mural that's already up in a big and prominent area of Los Angeles. And then, like I said, the amazing tributes in Madison Square Garden, other places in New York City, but you see internationally in the Philippines. Huge mural that they're putting in the square. It's just amazing to me. It really does feel like a rock star. The big story today, I mean, there's still some questions about why the helicopter was in the air when most of the aircraft at the time were grounded. But the L.A. County Sheriff's Office said they were disappointed and frustrated with TMZ for breaking the story. This is because they want to make sure that the family was notified of the nine who were on the plane. And they feel that TMZ was irresponsible and disrespectful for going ahead and not being courteous in that moment. And there might be something to that, you know, to be honest. It's always hard. But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. This could be a whole conversation. We just leave it here. But Tim Murakami, who's the undersheriff in Los Angeles County, he tweeted, "I'm saddened that I was gathering facts as a media outlet reported that Kobe had passed. I understand getting the scoop, but please allow us time to make personal notifications to their loved ones. It's very cold to hear the loss via media. Breaks my heart." And I get it. I don't know the time frame. I don't know. There's a lot of questions there. It's really easy to pile on the media, and especially TMZ, because TMZ has kind of been known to be a muckraker, and we understand it. But I wonder, this game that is breaking news is difficult. And TMZ knows that. And TMZ is never wrong. I know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news for those who want to hate on the media, but if a celebrity dies in the Los Angeles area, TMZ's on it. They broke Michael Jackson, Prince, Whitney Houston, Kobe Bryant. And I guess, where'd they get that information? They're not just getting the information to someone, you know, getting it hearsay and putting it on like you think they are. They're sourcing it, making sure it's correct, and they're going with it. So does that mean they have people inside the police department? Maybe they have people inside the dispatch office? Whatever it might be, they have people. And they're able to get to celebrity news faster than anybody else. Should they be punished for that? Because that's their bread and butter. That's what advertisers want to advertise with them for. It's definitely a courtesy to say you want to let the family know, especially something that's so just horrific. But there's no law against it. And they are doing due diligence. If they're wrong, there is law. There's libel and slander and defamation and all the kind of things that will get a media company in trouble for being wrong. But in this case, they weren't. So I don't know how I feel about it. Do the police departments across the world, do they have to think differently about how fast they notify next of kin because of the way that the media has supercharged how they need to report, being social media on Twitter, other places like that, and how easy it is for them to get the story out? Do the media need to work on some sort of set of rules that they all share so they're not in a position where if one decides due diligence or one decides courtesy, the other one doesn't just jump ahead? Because at the end of the day, and this is the point that I want to make, is it's you and me that TMZ serves. We want to know about Kobe Bryant first. They're not just doing it because they're trying to win some race and then they get a ton of money. They're trying to get our eyeballs, and we demand it. When Kobe Bryant and the story started coming out, when my brother texted me, said, "Kobe," first thing I did is I went to Google, put in the word Kobe Bryant. The first thing that came up on news was a TMZ tweet. So I don't know. At the end of the day, I am sensitive to the needs that family need to be notified. Everybody is. But how much time should be given for that process before the media reports something that everybody in the world wants to hear at that moment? And that's a question that I don't think has been answered. We want to vilify the media, but in doing so, we're vilifying us. Because we're the ones who demand it. So when I see TMZ, those muckrakers, oh, they're terrible. Oh, they're so disrespectful. It makes me think, I'm like, well, I was the one Googling Kobe Bryant when my brother texted me, right? I wanted the information. So is there responsibility to the story, to the family, or to me? It's a tough call. We can talk about it if you want. Come in here at 10 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you think the media has to be more responsible, or if we need to change the way that we notify the next of kin. 312-981-7200. Vic Vaughn's news right now. Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN. The phone number, 312-981-7200. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. Nick DiGilio takes over at 11. Talking a little bit about the topics of the day, of course, but also Kobe Bryant and whether or not TMZ should be scolded for going with the story before families were notified. Now, I didn't see in the article. I have to take a closer look because it just seemed that this was all based on a tweet from a LA County sheriff saying that he was disappointed that TMZ would go with the story while he was working on personal notifications. He doesn't really say if that happened or not. That's really kind of the heart, but let's just hypothetically say that it did. And the question is, what's the responsibility of the media, a place like TMZ, and what's the responsibility of the police department to recognize that information needs to get out? Let's go to Trucker Rich. Trucker Rich, how are you, man?
Not bad. How you doing tonight, Dust?
Good, man. So what do you think on this story? Do you just wholeheartedly against the media in this one?
Yes. I mean, there's other families. I mean, it was Kobe's chopper that went down, and his daughter was with him. But there's other families. I mean, that aren't celebrities,
yeah, right.
You know?
That really,
I mean, yeah,
makes it more
the Bryants were kind of, yeah, the Bryants were kind of used to that kind of publicity, you know? But what about the other average families, you know?
Terrible.
I mean, it would have been nice. I mean, I would have rather have somebody tell me that has a little bit more tact than to go on TV and say, yeah, this guy went down. He's dead and his family's dead, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, maybe I don't know that. And, you know, there's, you know, U.S. troops getting killed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make the headlines.
Right. You're absolutely right. The way that the military does it, the military is very, and it might be because it's not, you know, it's not such a huge thing. But we kind of saw it just in the last day with the plane that was shot down in Afghanistan. Where
right.
they said that the plane was shot down. They didn't confirm who was on the plane. They didn't talk until all the families and everything was notified before they actually, I don't even think that they actually have gone and said who was on that yet. But there's a little bit more of a lag time than what the media does with celebrities. Thanks, Trucker Rich. Appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. I agree. 815 says, I think the fact that there were others on the helicopter whose families could have learned from the deaths by hearing from the news makes it a little different. I agree. Maybe you're right. I think there is wiggle room, or at least a little bit of room, to talk about what the responsibility is of the media is to society or to those families, and what's their responsibility to getting a story out. Ken, what do you think, Ken?
Yeah, thanks. Great show, great topic. I would like to just add that I think overall the media has been irresponsible in its culture, mm-hmm. both on this with Kobe Bryant, but also I was a whistleblower once and against a Wall Street firm with a really major topic at hand. And the media organizations only wanted to talk about it if they could have an exclusive. I find the culture of the media to really be at fault on this, and there needs to be some soul searching because it's not a freedom of the press. It's an abuse of that freedom, and I think it's being abused in all media. And as a consumer and as a citizen, I really find it to be pretty disgusting, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think I would make no argument that there needs to be a culture change, that we are They're more often than not, the media industry and the media, which I'm part of it, can come across callous. They can be irresponsible in their reporting. They don't really think, there's not a lot of empathy. They're not thinking about others. I think TMZ gets a bad rap. I'll go on the limb and say that, because I think that regardless of what you think of the politics of that place or who runs it or anything like that, and they've had a lot of kind of trashy reporting in their time. But to say that the ABC News or the LA Times or NBC or CBS or Hollywood Reporter, whatever it might be, wasn't hot on their heels for the same story, and they would have done due diligence while TMZ didn't. TMZ just has way better resources. And what I mean by that is that they cover celebrities. And so they have created a culture in Los Angeles that covers celebrities, meaning they probably have sources in the dispatchers. They have sources probably the helicopter company. They probably have sources in the sheriff's department. They have worked those because those are going to be the ones that tell you about news that is breaking. And so as much as I want to pin it on TMZ and everything that you just said, Ken, and Trucker Rich, absolutely true. But I also believe somebody told them about this. This didn't just come out of thin air. They got their sources from people who were ready and willing to tell the story that Kobe Bryant's helicopter had crashed. Linda, what do you think, Linda?
Yeah, it's me. Hi.
Hi. What do you think? What's your thought on this?
Being a nurse, honey, and having dealt with only hospital nursing, medical, and families that I dealt with people who died, I think that I understand he was a great, great basketball player. But these other people are just as important as that man is. Yeah. And they didn't get the coverage, which they shouldn't really, because people are mourning.
Yeah. Linda, I'm sorry that to get emotional about that. And
no,
you're absolutely right. You're right.
I've dealt with them. So it's hard.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling in and talking about it. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
It's an emotional story. And thanks for your contribution, Linda. That's obviously bringing up a lot of trauma for Linda, who, as she told us, worked as a nurse. 630 says, Kobe being a celebrity and a public figure comes with the transparency of his life. It's like celebrities that complain about the paparazzi. You chose a career that brings attention to you. 630 says, I do feel bad for the other families, but I don't think it's unreasonable that Kobe's death was released so quickly. Yeah, I think that's kind of where I stand. That's really well said. 815 says it's totally wrong that it was reported before the families were told. I'm not even sure that's the case yet, though, guys. Even Kobe's family should have been able to find out from the police. I agree with 815 with 630. It comes with the territory, and unfortunately, I think some of the bad behavior from the media or the media's need to get that story out to all of his fans. You can see the effect this basketball player, this celebrity has had on so many people. The need to get that out trumped whether or not they were, I don't know if caring's the right word, if they were sensitive to whether or not the families had found out. That's so tough. Man, I agree with Linda. It's sad. The whole story is sad, but it's sad, too, that other people who were on that helicopter were not only, you know, lost their lives and their families are grieving, but they were victims of celebrity media culture where nobody at TMZ thought even cared if their families were notified. Catherine.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine. What do you think?
I think that TMZ went over the line. I really believe that they should have taken that beat and let people be notified before they found out on TMZ.
Yeah. It's hard because TMZ is not necessarily competing with or waiting for that because they know that the other media companies will have to also be on good behavior, right?
Well, my son was on a ship in Australia and there with the Marines, and one of those helicopters crashed. And it was my son's ship, and we waited from when we found out at 8 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, my gosh.
When they finally said, all families have been notified. And I just think everybody deserves, all those families deserve that respect and that time. So, I know it was the military,
right.
But I really believe in this case, the military did it correctly.
That's great. I mean, you hear that more often, and we were talking about that earlier. The media and the military have a different kind of relationship. So maybe it is the culture around celebrity and the culture around media. Catherine, thanks for sharing your story.
It's more than that. It's this, drive to be the first with the story,
yeah.
Regardless of anyone's feelings, regardless of anyone's, need for privacy and everything else. These people all found out. They probably knew that they were with Kobe Bryant. They all found out that whoever was on that plane died before anyone had a chance to tell them.
Yeah.
It's disgraceful, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks, Catherine. Yeah, no doubt. The families, of course, being on the helicopter and maybe not hearing about a story from the police and perhaps hearing about it from the media beforehand it makes this a much more gray story. As 708 says, it's quite possible it's going to be the biggest story of the year. They had to do it. That's a good point. It's tough. It's very difficult in that situation because the impact that story is going to have on not just the basketball community, not just sports fans, how much impact that story is going to have on the world as we're seeing how it's playing out now, it has to be taken into account. And I absolutely agree with what Catherine said. It's disgraceful. But you can understand why the media wants to move ahead and why they have a one-track mind, if you will, to get that story out. And in this case, if it was just a helicopter crash with Kobe Bryant and there weren't eight other people on that flight, or that you call it a helicopter flight on that, yeah, then yeah, I think it'd be snap judgment for them to go with it. But you're right. Absolutely. It has to get gray when there are so many other people involved. Molly, welcome.
Hey, Justin.
How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm good. What's your thought?
So that was actually my text that came in, and I think it's probably maybe an unpopular opinion, but part of being a celebrity, there's a territory that comes along with it. I mean, you're set on this platform that allows you to have a lot of riches, a lot of resources, but it comes with a sacrifice, and being under the microscope and having your whole life being transparent is part of it. And anybody that's associated with a celebrity has to be aware that there's a chance that their life is also under the microscope as well.
Yeah.
You know, do I think it was fully fair what TMZ did? No, but like you had mentioned before, they've got resources in all sorts of fields, and
yeah.
It was going to come out eventually. I don't know how you avoid bringing up Kobe and not the other families putting two and two together. Oh, my wife or my kids is on that plane.
It's terrible, right?
But I feel like when you associate yourself with a celebrity, you got to know, like, if something happens and I'm with them, there's a really good chance that there's going to be public attention drawn to this.
Yeah. Thanks, Molly. That's great. That's a good point. Say, that's... That's life in the celebrity, I guess. But it makes me wonder as well just about whether or not we need to have a convention, if you will, to talk about some of the issues in media, especially when it has to do with how fast we want to tell this story. We've let competition and capitalism at its core kind of lead the private sector to this media. And now we're in a position where, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. If it's first, you win. If you're playing to one particular set of ideology, you can mishmash the facts. There's a lot happening in media right now that I think a lot of us out listening and consuming this media has a problem with. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. I'm late to it. We'll come back. And I want to get to the top 25 trusted brands in America. I'll have that conversation coming up. Stay with us. All right. So there's a story that is out in, I guess it's in the advertising world. I didn't know that they actually did polls and reports like this, but I saw this great story about the top 25 trusted brands in America. They took a survey, over 17,000 people or so. I think there was 2,000 brands that were mentioned at one point by the participants of the survey. And they came up with the 25 most trusted brands in America. Some may surprise you. Some you're like, eh, of course, Amazon got it. Amazon, Walmart got it. So what I want to do, 312-981-7200 is a phone number. I got a little news or ruse for you. Be honest with me. You don't have to Google it. No need to Google. This is a Google-free zone. Oh, Google's on the list, by the way. We'll talk about which of the brands didn't make the top 25. So I'll give you some multiple choice. And if you pick the right one, then you win a prize. How about that? We'll play a little game show tonight. 312-981-7200. Want to get on the line now? We'll do it right after the break. 312-981-7200. Pick something from the prize sheet. We don't go to the prize sheet enough, Pete. Today? Oh. The prize sheet is being used. Some interesting ideas here. I mean, to say that they 17,000 people, I think that's great. They were asked, how much do you trust each brand? What's your name? They could respond a lot. They could say some, not much, not at all, or I don't know. The ranking is determined by the share of a lot responses, whatever that means. They include all the generations as well. You want to do one? Let's do one. You want to do one? Okay. Elizabeth, you're up. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey.
Hi. Do you consider yourself somebody who trusts brands?
Moderately.
That's a good answer. All right, so I'm gonna throw out some of these, okay? And the question I'm gonna ask you is pretty simple. Which of these brands, I'm gonna name three, which of these brands did not make the top 25? Okay, so we'll start with number one. Chick-fil-A, number one. Number two, Campbell Soup. Or number three, Target. Which of those three brands did not make the top 25 trusted brands in America? Chick-fil-A, Campbell Soup, or Target?
I'm going to say one, Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. Oh, too bad. If you believe this, if you can believe this, Chick-fil-A is actually in number six. Isn't that amazing to think about that?
Wow.
It's all by generations, but Chick-fil-A is in the top 10 in all of the generations. That's interesting. I would have not thought that, but Chick-fil-A, a top 10 trusted brand in America. Thanks for playing, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Oh, she almost got it. 312-981-7200 if you want to play. I got a couple of those. You think you could do better than Elizabeth? Pick from the prize sheet? 312-981-7200. The most trusted brands in America. Coming up right after the break. 720 WGN. All right, 312-981-7200. The phone number, Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. I got some people lined up on the line who want to take a shot at the most trusted brands in America. I may even flip the script at some point because I got some tricks if you think you got me beat. Let's talk to Carol to start us off. Carol, how are you?
Hi, Justin. I'm good. Thanks.
All right. Do you feel like you know brands? Do you have a trusted brand?
I do. I feel I trust certain brands.
Okay. And what does that mean? What is trust in a brand? Like, you know that if that it's quality, or do you know that it's going to be easy to return something? What is a trust in a brand to you?
Well, when I'm thinking brands, I'm thinking like Kraft, Scott Tissue, mm-hmm. and so I'm thinking quality, you know, that they haven't gone down in their quality.
All right. I'll give you the same one. How about that? Okay. So which one of these did not make the top 25?
Okay.
Chick-fil-A, Campbell's Soup, or Target?
And I was thinking Campbell's Soup.
Oh, no. The answer is Target.
Nope. Oh, my God.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Chick-fil-A shows up in the top 10. Campbell's Soup in the top 25. Target nowhere to be found. Interesting.
Right? Wow.
There you go. Thanks, Carol. Right. Thanks for playing. She almost got it there. All right, Susan, you're up. Susan, how are you?
Great.
Okay, so what do you think? You feel like you have trusted brands you go to?
Sure.
Yeah? What's a trusted brand of yours?
Something that's of quality, and the quality is consistent.
Okay. All right, you ready for this?
I'll try
a new one for you. All right, the number one, which one of these brands did not make the top 25 of the trusted brands in America? One, UPS. Okay. Two, Colgate. Three, Buffalo Wild Wings.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Hey, you got it. That's it. That's right. Buffalo Wild Wings was nowhere to be found in the top 25 trusted brands, probably for good reason after what's happened the last couple weeks. All right, you're a winner, Susan. Good job. I'm going to keep you on hold here, okay, so Pete will talk to you. Thanks for calling. Okay. Thanks for playing. That was an easy one, though, right? And Buffalo Wild Wings in the news, so maybe we got to get a little tougher. All right, I got some tougher ones for you. Let's go to Linda. Linda,
yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Good. So you have a trusted brand? Is there a brand you go to when you see it in the grocery store? You're like, that's my brand.
Yeah, I do. I only have certain things that I buy, and because I know that they're good, and I've used them, so I just repeatedly use them over and over.
That's smart. I'm completely the opposite. I am so not dependent on the brand. I am so dependent on the sale price.
No. I won't even go generic. I'll stick with my regular.
You still do generic in the... I never see generic products anymore. That black and white, remember that? You never see those?
Yeah, but they're still there.
They're still there. All right, here we go. All right, you ready for this? All right, which one of these brands did not make the top 25 brands, most trusted brands in America? Number one, Netflix. Number two, Subway. Or number three, Heinz. Which one?
What was number three?
Heinz ketchup. So which one is it? Is it Netflix, Subway, or Heinz? Which one of these is not in the top 25?
Number two.
Subway?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. That's right. Subway is not in the top 25 brands trusted most by people in America. Way to go, Linda. You nailed
it. I won't even buy it. I don't like it.
There you go.
Let me tell you what it is. It's lunch meat on a bun.
You don't trust lunch meat on a bun?
If I want lunch meat, I'll go to the store and get it.
Awesome. Thanks, Linda. All right.
Okay.
Good job. So we're getting somewhere. Two winners. Pete's starting to sweat. All right. We'll do one more. You want to do one more? We'll do one more with Gus. You want to do Gus? Let's try it. Gus, you ready?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Gus. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Do you have a trusted brand? Are you someone who trusts brands, or you go by just a sale price in the grocery store?
No, I go by trusted name.
Okay. All right. I'll give you three, okay?
Make an easy one.
This might get a little tougher. Which of these brands did not make the top 25? National Geographic. Number two, AAA. Or number three, Nike. Which one of these brands did not make the top 25? Gus?
What was the second one?
The second one was AAA, the car service.
I'll go with Ed.
AAA? Sorry, they actually are one of the top brands in America. Thanks for playing, Gus. Good try. That's fun. This is a great website. The actual place, 25 most trusted brands in America. They did the top 25. And then they also break it down by generation. So they have four different categories. Gen Z adults, millennials, Gen Xers, and boomers. Can you guess the number one brand for Gen Z adults? It's simple. Google. Google's also the number one brand for millennials. It's number two for Gen Xers. And for boomers, can you guess? It doesn't even show up in the top 25. How about that? Wow, that's an amazing stat. So, of course, we're talking about the most trusted brands in America. A new study out. They surveyed 17,000 people across different generations. Gen Z adults, number two, Netflix, right? Netflix shows up for millennials at number five. Netflix shows up as number 24 to Gen Xers. And for boomers, Netflix doesn't show up at all. Let me give you the top 25. I want to give you the top 10 for boomers. Okay, so for the boomer generation, here are the top 10 brands as part of the survey. Number 10, Crest toothpaste. Number 9, Campbell's soup. Number 8, Chick-fil-A. Number 7, M&M's. Number 6, AAA. Number 5, Cheerios. Number 4, Weather Channel. That's an interesting one. Number 3, Hershey's. Number 2, UPS. And number 1, the United States Postal Service. Those are the top 10 brands for boomers. Interesting. 312-981-7200. I don't think I have any prizes left on the prize list. We could do some more if you want to do it without winning prizes. You want to take a shot at this. I can test you. I can quiz you. 312-981-7200. We had two things to give away. We gave them away. But if you want to play, let's play. 312-981-7200. I got a couple more that I can trick you on before I go through the rest of the top 10s. 312-981-7200. Okay. I'll go through the top 10s then. All right. For Gen Xers, you got Campbell's Soup. Number 9, Tide. Tide is a trusted brand. See that? 8, UPS. 7, Crest. Everyone loves Crest. Number 6, The Weather Channel. Blows my mind how many people trust the brand, The Weather Channel. Number 5, PayPal. Huh. Number 4 is Hershey. Number 3 is Amazon. Number 2 is Google. And number 1, the United States Postal Service. What? The Postal Service, both for boomers and for Gen X, the most trusted brand in America. All right, you ready for the millennial top 10? This is good. Number 10, Cheerios. Number 9, Chick-fil-A. Number 8, surprising entry, YouTube. I would not think of YouTube to be a trusted brand, but they're always there. They're reliable. Maybe some of the content is gross. But I guess when you watch YouTube, it works, right? When you when's the last time you actually put something in to search on YouTube and it did not come up for you? I mean, I use YouTube to do karaoke on my couch. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I was jamming out this weekend. Number 7 is Dove. Interesting. Number 6, Target. Was not on the top 25 brands, but it shows up for the top 10 for millennials. Number 5, Netflix. Number 4, PayPal. Number 3, Amazon. Number 2, the United States Postal Service. Beat out the number 1 spot, Google. That's millennials. Now, for Gen Z adults, which I guess would be 18 to 21. I'm not sure who Gen Z adults are. This is where it gets really interesting. So the top 25 is worth repeating. This is good. You're going to like this. Okay, for the top 20, I'm going to do the top 25 brands for Gen Z adults. This is, again, like I said, 18 to 22-year-olds. Blows my mind to look at this. Number 25, Dollar Tree. Okay. This seems to be weird. Number 24, Pixar. Number 23, Doritos. Come on. Number 22, Oreos. Number 21, Cheerios. Is it tied on there? Number 19, PayPal. Number 18, M&M's. Number 17, Microsoft. Showing up there. Number 16, amazing, you guys. Marvel Studios. The 16th most trusted brand among the Gen Z generation. 18 to 22-year-olds. Number 15, Kit Kat. Next, Hulu. The streaming service, Hulu. Coming in at number 14, Apple. 13 is Walmart. 12, the United States Postal Service. Seems about the right placement. Number 11, Nintendo. Number 10 is Gatorade. These are such weird brands. Number 9, Chick-fil-A. Number 8, Colgate. Crest is out. Colgate's in. Weird. Number 7 is Nike. Number 6 is Target. Number 5, PlayStation. Number 4, YouTube. Number 3, Amazon. Number 2, Netflix. And the number 1 most trusted brand for Gen Z adults, people through 18 to 22, is Google. Really interesting stuff. If you want to check it out, morningconsult.com is the website. You just probably can Google the top 25 most trusted brands in America. It's interesting to see how each generation ranks the different brands here in America. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. When we come back, let's talk about some of these stories I was talking about stress. Husbands are stressing out wives more than the kids are. And also, a new study today from Appalachian State University that says roasting your partner, wrote like, you roasted, I guess that's what you say, actually might be good for your relationship. Those stories coming up here on 720 WGN. Justin Goffman here. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Nick DiGilio joins us here on 720 WGN to take over and take us through the nighttime. 312-981-7200. We'll be back tomorrow night. Greg Flan will be back with the swap meet. If you got some great... it was the woman who was talking about Downers Grove. She had the two dolls that actually came from Pierce Downer. She gave it to the Historical Society. I would have kept it. Greg would have told you how much it would be worth on eBay. That's tomorrow night. We're on after Northwestern basketball, so I think we start a little bit later tomorrow night, like 8:30. So tune in. Now, on Thursday, as I've been talking about, and we'll be wrapping up our Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match, which obviously has taken a lot of time to get to this point, but very excited to have the final matchup, the championship matchup between Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the Blues Brothers. Which is the best Chicago movie of all time? Ferris Bueller or the Blues Brothers? And we have, what an exhaustive search. There really is no way to, at this point in the game, say, well, what about this movie or what about that movie? They've all been eliminated. This was very scientific. And we're down to the final two movies, and that'll be Thursday night. A survey of 7,000 moms by today, I'm going to show today, found on average that they rate their levels of stress, mothers, at a worryingly high 8.5 out of 10. Ouch. And 46% say their husbands add more stress to their day-to-day lives than their children that they care for. Some mothers say it's like
another child. A joke, but I just pointed out that that's a extremely high stress level. Why is that? Do you feel that's the case? We should talk about this. Maybe we'll talk about this tomorrow. It seems like a really high stress level. And if husbands are adding to mothers and wives' stress level at that rate, obviously communication is off. Maybe you should start roasting your partner. Maybe start roasting your husband. That usually works. Because according to researchers at Appalachian State University, couples who roast each other on a daily basis, that just means like kind of make fun of them. You're roasted, like you're at a roast. Nice glasses, Pete. That kind of thing. Couples who roast each other every day are more likely to have a longer and happier relationship. Experts believe that teasing your partner actually highlights the thing you love most about them, makes them feel seen, which makes for a strong and happy romance in the long term. So what did we learn tonight? That husbands are stressing out wives more than their kids. And if you want a long and happy relationship, you got to roast them. That's going to be my new tagline. You roasted. Think it could work? Every time I throw something out, caller calls in and say, not true. You've been roasted. That could be my thing, like a Wendy Williams kind of thing. I don't know if I buy these. These are lifestyle studies. I'm glad they're doing the studies. I buy the first one more than the second one. In my relationship, I'm not sure, because I feel like I start roasting the things that are funny quirks or abnormalities with my wife. That's not going to go well. It either turns into a bigger roast my way, or it starts a fight. Maybe I'm just too vindictive of a roaster. Maybe I got to lighten up on my delight roast. It's like coffee. Maybe it's too... Stop doing the dark roasts. Go to more of a medium roast. Be a light roast. But the stress is a serious story. If they're talking to, they said 7,000 moms, and they just asked, what's your level of stress on a daily basis? And the average is 8.5 out of 10. It seems pretty high. And the story they're telling is that husbands aren't helping, that we're adding to the stress. And I can see that. I don't know if they didn't, in this particular study survey, they don't think they asked the other way around. You know, what is the stress level for husbands? And do wives stress them out? Because I think you might get a similar reaction. But most of the mothers and the wives that were surveyed talked about that the husbands try to equate their stress level with their wives' stress level, and that causes stress for the moms and the wives. That stress from work or stress from anything that's outside of the house is on some sort of equal playing field. I do that. I'm guilty of that all the time. I'm stressed too. I mean, we didn't have a commercial break at 45, and I was like, oh, I had to talk for an extra 5 minutes. What about me? So maybe we can talk about that tomorrow. I'm a little bit worried about that stress level, I'll be honest. As 630 says, really, roasting your partner, does that work for you? No, it does not. You're right. I also have a mail carrier who's mad because I chuckled during the last segment that U.S. Postal Service was the most trusted brand of all time, or of, you know, trusted brand by Americans. And I kind of chuckled because that was for a boomer. Because you would never think, nothing disrespectful to mail carriers or anyone who works with the, that's not my point. My point being that that brand is not a brand that traditionally carries over to a younger generation. I don't know when the postal jokes started and the post office jokes kind of started, maybe in the 90s or whatever it might be.
But it's interesting to me that the boomers consider that to be the number one brand. But you look at the Gen Zs and the millennials, and it's nowhere to be found. I'm completely shocked and surprised that the U.S. Postal Service is the number one brand for the baby boomer generation. Or as my son says, okay, boomer. He says that to me. I'm like, you're not doing it right. You could say, okay, Gen Z Xer. That's what we are, Gen Xers. We'll see. Anyway, great show tonight. Thanks to everyone who called in and everyone who texted in. Appreciate it. Nick DiGilio coming up next. I think we got through most of the things that we had on our list today. The only thing I didn't get to, the second night in a row I did not get to, is that the superstars, the reality superstars, Kristen Cavallari and Cavallari and Jay Cutler are coming to Chicago to their store, their new store in the West Loop, Uncommon James. It was called Uncommon James. And they're going to be there for a Valentine's Day event, which for like $200, you can hang out with them in the store. And I've had that on my list twice to be like, hey, let's talk about Kristen Cavallari and Jay Cutler. And we haven't gotten to. So there you go. Now we're talking about it. Would you pay $200 to go mingle with Jay Cutler? I would pay $200 to go mingle with Jay Cutler if it's the Jay Cutler from the Very Cavallari Show. The Jay Cutler who was on the football field, the former Bear, you're not getting a cent of my money. You were not fun. But on the show, you're total fun. If you ever see Jay Cutler on the reality show on Very Cavallari on E!, he's amazing. He's a great comic foil, and he is a great character for that show. He doesn't care. He's just kind of hanging out. He's got funny quips. Most of the time, he's in sweatpants. He's great. I would put him on a short list for the Emmys. On a football field? No. We could have an injury to Mitch Trubisky and an injury to Chase Daniel. And they would say, it's time to bring Jay Cutler back. And be like, I'm out. Shutting the TV off. But, like I said, I would go with my Kristen Cavallari t-shirt on. I have one of those. And I would support Jay and Kristen over Jay Cutler from football. All right, so that's going to do it tonight. I think we got to everything. It was a jam-packed show. We started the show talking about the coronavirus and whether or not you're worried. And I think that that's a story that we're going to be paying attention to. We actually started with the interview with Arne Duncan, the former education secretary, talking about violence and their desire for Chicago Cred to shave 20% off the numbers of fatalities that come with gun violence every year. They want to get it under 400, which is still a ton of people. But they get under 400, it'll be the lowest number since the 60s. Then we talked about coronavirus. Then we talked about the state of the state and taxes, and whether or not you would go for a change and what we should do with pensions. Great, thoughtful conversation there. Then found ourselves talking about moving the Super Bowl to Saturdays and getting to know the surrounding towns and why they're named the way they're named. Carol Stream was a daughter of Jay Stream, a developer. Carol Stream died this week. That's how we figured that out. And my favorite call, which is about Romeoville and Joliet. And it used to be called Juliet. And before Romeoville, it was Romeo. They were neighboring towns. Romeo and Juliet. That's great. I never knew that. And, of course, we talked about the brands and stress and roasting your partner, which never works. We got it tonight. Like I said, tomorrow night we're on after Northwestern basketball. So we'll be on probably around 8:30. And we'll have Greg Flam with Swap Meet, and we get Heather Sharon to join us as she does on every Wednesday. And we'll do a little review of what was in the state of the state. That speech is going to happen at noon tomorrow. The governor lays out his plans for and his priorities for 2020 coming up here. Starts the budget talks in earnest. So we will talk about the state of the state, and then we will, of course, delve right into the swap meet with Greg. The movie challenge is on Thursday. And on Friday, Adam Davison, a longtime Chicagoan who's now a New York Times Magazine columnist and an economist, he has a new book about the passion economy and how the economy used to kind of push down people's creativity, but this new economy in the 21st century is rewarding it. So we'll talk with Adam Davidson, who will be in town. We talk about how we used to live right next to each other. He was on the other side of Argyle Street in Ravenswood, where we were both young punks messing it up here in Chicago. Talk about that, too. All right, Nick DiGilio coming up next after Vic's News here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thanks for listening tonight. Thanks for letting me be a part of your evening. And like I said, we'll be back tomorrow night after the Northwestern Wildcats basketball game, probably 8 or 8:30.